We're reading a summary of first canto of Bhagavatam, which is called Unveiling the Lotus Feet, which is the production of Burijan, Pujapad Burijan Prabhu, who has made a very nice analysis and summary of the Srimad Bhagavatam, first four cantos. This particular section of the Bhagavatam, Narada Muni is speaking, and he's saying that no one can avoid the control of Lord Krishna. One may willingly follow Krishna's commands or unwillingly submit, forced to accept reactions due to non-compliance. In either case, willingly or unwillingly, one must necessarily submit to Krishna, for the Lord is the supreme controller. One should simply act dutifully, for other actions and attempts will entangle one in the illusion of this world. Then there's a verse, chapter 13, verse 43. As a player sets up and disperses his playthings according to his own sweet will, the supreme will of the Lord brings men together and separates them. Prabhupada explains in the purport. We must know for certain that the particular position in which we are now set up is an arrangement of the supreme will in terms of our own acts in the past. So there's two things going on. We act, every moment we're acting, and last life we did so much action. And every action creates a reaction. When you act, then that creates a bijam. It's like if you have a fruit, if you eat a fruit and then you put it in the ground, there's so many seeds in that fruit, and when you put it in the ground, more fruits will come. So whenever we act, that action creates a bijam, karma bij. And that bijam is stored in the citta. And then that bija will grow and produce a fruit in the next life or life after it. So whatever we did in our last lives, we did so many activities, and now we're getting the results or the fruits in this life. And the arrangement, how we get those fruits, how we experience those fruits, is all being arranged by God, by the Paramatma and the demigods. Radhe Radhe. So this is, here we are. The soul is in a particular body, surrounded by a particular group of people, friends, relatives, lovers, husbands, wives, children, etc. And we have to see that this is our desire and the will of the Lord that brought all these things together. Prabhupada adds that the Lord is the supreme will. Even everywhere, this idea of will, icchashakti. Icchashakti means desire, will, thinking, feeling, willing. These are the symptoms of a conscious entity. A conscious entity has these attributes of thinking, feeling, and willing. That this floor doesn't have the power to think, or to feel, or to will. But living entity has thinking, feeling, and willing. And the more evolved that living entity is, in terms of life form, the higher the life form, and the greater the knowledge, the more power, willpower he has. The more power of thinking, the more power of feeling and willing. Like human beings, we're in human form. It's a very evolved life form. Sometimes human life is described as the crown of creation. All the different animals and all the different members, fish and birds and trees, etc., that make up the creation. As you have a human body, then on top of your body you have a crown, mukut. So the crown of all the creation is the human form. But in human form there are various expressions of humanity. Some are civilized, some are uncivilized. Some are devas, kimpurushas, kinaras, all types of celestial beings, and even subterranean human forms living in lower planets. But this power of thinking, feeling, and willing, the greater knowledge one has, the more free will he has. It's not what free will is. Like we say, human beings, we have some free will. Actually, we don't have any free will until we're free. Because we're bound. It's called Baddha, Nitya Baddha. We're conditioned souls. We're bound. So as long as we're under the modes of nature, we're not free. So I'm not making a decision. The modes are making a decision. We don't make a decision to sleep. The mode of ignorance comes and swallows us like a serpent and says, now sleep. Even though you might say, oh, I have work to do, I want to stay awake. And then the mode of ignorance says, no, sleep. Whomp, and swallows you and you fall asleep despite your greatest efforts. So the modes, actually, people are simply being pushed by the modes, being pushed by passion or ignorance or sometimes goodness. And they're thinking, oh, I made this choice. I made this choice. This was my free will to act like this. But it's not. Actually, anyone who's controlled by the modes of nature has practically no free will. It's actually the will, it's the pushing of the modes of nature. Until one becomes liberated, or one is liberated, then you can actually, one's free from the modes of nature, which means the controlling agents. The modes of nature are controlling everything. So when we become free from the modes of nature, then we can actually say we have free will. Because then we can choose. That's why they say he's self-realized, meaning he realized the self different from the body. He eats when he wants to eat. He's not pushed to eat. Oh, I feel so hungry, I have to eat something. So there's pushing of hunger. No, I'm not eating, I'm fasting or whatever. Then he has free will. One actually greater knowledge one has, and he says, wait a minute, this is not me. This is his body. The body is pushing me. The body is dictating. This is not me. This mode of passion is pushing me to act like this. This mode of ignorance is pushing me to sleep. This mode of passion is pushing me for sex life or sex enjoyment. But this is not the Atma. The Atma is free from all these material inebrities, material desires. So it's just the modes of nature pushing us to be passionate or pushing us, oh, now I'm peaceful or some subject things. So as one gets greater, when one gets transcendental knowledge, the more knowledge one has, the more free will one actually has, because then he leaves the influence of the modes of nature. Then he, as an independent soul, is doing what he wants to do, not doing what the modes of nature want you to do. In the Bible, they have this phrase, they recognize it in a general way. They say, the soul is willing, but the flesh is weak. They have the same phrase. The soul is willing, with Icha Shakti. The soul is willing, but the flesh means the material body. Flesh, bone, skin, hair, tooth, nail. Will. We have to set our will. That's what sankalpa is all about. Sankalpa. Sankalpa means you fix your will. What do you will? What is your will? We have this concept. When someone's about to die, they make out their what? What's it called?
Yeah.
It's called will. I don't know about India. It's called the will. Vasiyat. Vasiyat means control, passing control to someone. Vasiyat.
What's the Urdu translation?
It's the transfer of rights, kind of something like
passing of control. Because there's Vasibhut. There's more. Vasibhut means the control of the living entities. That's the name for Krishna. Vasibhut. So it sounded like controller. So last will and testament. Last will and testament. So people usually, they only at the end they make some will. Well, I'm leaving now, and there's a few things that I really wanted to do or should have been done, so my son, please do these things. But a devotee, he should make his will every day. I will to do this. I want to do this. I want to dedicate myself to Krishna. At least this one life, as Prabhupada often spoke. He said, so many lifetimes we have done it so-called our way. We have the will to do it. I want to do it. I will to do it. And I will do it. The mother says, don't do this. And the child says, I will do this. Especially because you said, don't do it. That gives me more enthusiasm. If you didn't say anything, I may have done it or not. But since you were prohibiting me from doing this activity, then I must do it, I will do it. So we are like children of God also. God is our Father. Ambija Pradapita. He's a seed-giving Father. And so we should also follow, we should have a will to serve Him and make a commitment, take a sankalpa. In this one life, as Prabhupada said, so many lifetimes we've done it our way, and we've done it whatever we wanted, or at least tried to do whatever we wanted, and play it our way. And Prabhupada said, just dedicate this one life to Krishna. Only one life. And what's left of it, anyway? If you live to be 70, and you're already 30 or more, you're almost halfway done. You're maybe third way done. So 33 to 50% of our lives, we've already done our will. We've executed our will. I want this, and I want that, and I want to do this, and I want to do that, and I believe in this, and I believe in that. And Prabhupada would say, in the remaining years of our lives, whatever years they are, let us fully dedicate ourselves to the service of Krishna. Become His dedicated servants. Let that be our will. Other things are in motion. Like you turn on the fan, if you're lucky, the fan may be spinning. And so that's going on. Okay, the fan's going on. But is that all that you do? You come in and look at the fan? Oh no, the fan's going on, but I'm going to do some other things. I'm going to watch TV, I'm going to eat, I'm going to sleep, I'm going to sew clothes, I'm going to read the Bhagavatam, I'm going to chant japa. But that fan is going on. And that's just, it's going on its own power. But we are expressing our will in a different way. We're not taking a fan and fanning ourselves, because that's going on. The same way, whatever activities we have set in motion, which have been set in motion by our Prabhupada Karma has set us on a particular track. Okay, you're married and you have these children, you have this job, you have these relationships. Okay, that's your fan. That's the background. That's the fan over your head. That's spinning around. But now what are you going to consciously do? How are you going to direct your will, your sankalpa? What do you want to do, actually do with your life? That's already being done. That's being done to you. Prabhupada is being done to you, which you set up in your last life. Now what course do you want to set for your new life? Because two things are going on, just like in the room. The fan is going on in the room, and you're also in the room. So two activities are going on. The fan is spinning around, but you're doing something different. And although you're being influenced by that fan, the wind of that fan is blowing on your head. And you're part of that fan. That fan is part of your life as long as you're in that room. And so your life is circumscribed by the borders of that room. So the borders of that room is your prarabdha. Karma. And so then your free will is, what will you do with that fan over your head? So the prayer is going on, but now, that's going on, let it go on. I'm not going to put any energy into that. I'm not going to go up there and try to push that fan and make it go faster. Let it go on. I'm going to do something different. I'm going to actually engage every minute that I can find in the service of Krishna, to hear and chant and remember Krishna. And eventually that fan, eventually the power will stop and that fan will finish. And then whatever I've established will be with me. Like say you're sewing a sweater. You're making a sweater in the room. You're sitting, the fan's going on. And you're sewing for a couple of days. And all of a sudden the power goes out. There's a power shortage and the fan stops. And then you say, oh, there's no more fan. But look what I did in 3 days. I made a sweater. I produced this nice sweater, nice thing. So now the same thing, if we're working to develop our bhakti, to cultivate our devotion and love for Krishna, and our prarabdha is going on, and one day, one lifetime, all that will finish. And what we'll have in our hand, what we'll actually have is all our activities in devotion. That'll be our production. That'll be our production. That'll be our wealth. That'll be our art. Our attainment. Art means our objective, our attainment, our wealth. Our possession. So this is why we should, as much as possible, endeavor on the path of bhakti and express our will for that. We don't have to put any willpower into family life or job. That is already going on. It'll go on. Whatever is destined. If you're destined to get a husband, which most everyone is, you'll get it. It'll come. So don't even think about it. You make some endeavor. Obviously, Krishna doesn't say sit in a corner and don't do anything. We must work. We have to endeavor simply to maintain the body. This body is a working organism. It must move. Even to exist, you must work. You know, you stand in a corner and you can't stand there forever. You have to walk around the room a little bit. Otherwise, you won't digest your food if you just stand in the corner. So energy must be expended. But our conscious willpower should be put into the... We should will to serve Krishna. We should use, yes, my thinking, feeling, willing. We should think how to serve Krishna and develop our feelings for Krishna and express our will to serve Krishna. Yes, I want to serve Krishna. I want to be qualified. I want to qualify myself for His eternal service. And I want to realize my role in the spiritual world. I want to know, I want to come to grips with, or come to realize, what is my spiritual identity? What is my individual contribution to the center? Krishna has designated me to love Him in a particular way. He is waiting for my love to be expressed in a particular capacity, in a particular form and expression. And that secret He is locked within my heart. He knows the secret. It's a known secret to Him. And we can know the secret also. And that's the fruit of devotion. The fruit of devotion is to unlock the secret. To unlock the secret relationship that every jiva has with the Lord in the heart. That is the fulfillment. That is the perfection of the human endeavor. We seek out happiness through relationships. We either relate with objects and try to find happiness by relating with objects, or we relate with people and try to find happiness. This is the purpose of relationships. But the real we already have a relationship with Krishna. With God, and that's eternal. It's called sthayibhava. Sthayi means fixed or situated or standing. Bhav means love. A permanent loving relationship with Krishna is established in a seed-like form in the heart. And when the mercy comes from the Lord, through His name, through His devotion, through His devotees, which is all, they're all internal energy. The devotees of the Lord are internal energy. The Holy Name is internal energy. The Lord Himself is internal energy. The Sarup Shakti mixes with the Tatastha Shakti. We are Tatastha Shakti. And when the Sarup Shakti mixes with the Tatastha Shakti, then we will get our Sarup. We'll understand, not get, but we'll understand what is our Sarup. Swarup, my form. Sarup Siddhi, my perfect spiritual form. Narada assured Yudhisthira that the pain he felt at Dhritarashtra's separation was due only to illusory affection, nothing more. See what happened in this section of the Bhagavatam. After the Kurukshetra battle, Dhritarashtra was living in the house in the palace of Yudhisthira. And he was very much taken care of. But of course he was living there like a household pet or like a dog. And then Vidura came there and preached to him that he should leave this place and take up self-realization. So Dhritarashtra finally one time he disappeared, he left, went to the mountains. And Yudhisthira was feeling separation from him. So the Narada Muni came there and said, "You're feeling some separation. It's all Maya, illusory affection. The soul is eternal and the body is ephemeral," which means temporary. "What then is worthy of lamentation?" Then Narada says, "Give up your anxiety due to ignorance of the self. You are now thinking how they who are helpless poor creatures will exist without you. It is the Lord, not Yudhisthira, who is Bhuta Brit, the protector of all living entities. Considering that every material body is made of and fully controlled by time, karma, and the three modes of material nature, then can it be being already in the jaws of the serpent protect others?" So Narada is challenging Yudhisthira. He's saying, "Listen, everyone's body, there's a serpent." Serpent, no serpent, sarp, snake. It's like Krishna, the coward voice. All the coward boys entered the belly of Agasura. He opened his mouth and they all walked into Agasura. And Krishna was standing, oh, what's happening? Then finally he went inside. So if you can imagine, if you were standing there and someone says, oh, look at this cave. Look at this, let's play in this cave. And you go inside, you're playing in the field, and you go in the cave. You enter the cave. Oh, it's nice. And then someone says, it's not a cave, it's a huge snake. We better get out of here. Oh, no. Ah, choom. And he closes his jaws and you're finished. That's what happened to the coward boys. They got trapped in Nagasura. So this serpent, everyone is actually standing in the jaws. There's the jaws, right? Standing in the jaws of the serpent. So what serpent is Narada Muni talking about?
Right?
Yeah. You ever heard of something called Kala Sarp Yoga? If you ever do astrology, it's a Kala Sarp Yoga. There's a particular yoga means combination of stars that they can check in, as Jyotish can check in your chart. If you're in Kala Sarp Yoga, it's very dangerous. Because Kala Sarp means the snake of time. So everyone is standing inside the snake. And that's what Narada Muni is saying. He says, how can you think you're protecting Dhritarashtra and he's living at your mercy in your palace? You can be swallowed by the serpent of time at any second. You're not protecting anyone. Who's protecting you? Who's maintaining you? It's only Bhagavan. Bhagavan Sri Krishna. So how can you protect others? One can protect others only to the degree that one can control both others and the environment. It's, oh yes, I'm protecting my family. How can you protect your family? Can you control others? Can you control the environment? Can you... the terrorists, you know the movements of every person in Delhi. You can control the movements of everyone. You can control the environment. If some windstorm comes, you can say, no wind, go. Don't blow away my house. Don't blow down a tree on top of my house. Or if some terrorist is coming and throwing hand grenades in everybody's house. And you can control that person? You can't control. Narada Muni told Yudhisthira that he himself was completely controlled and trapped in the jaws of the serpent of time. How could he then protect Dhritarashtra or anyone else? Narada said, you may fear that your uncle Dhritarashtra, alone and away from your protection, may be eaten by some animal in the forest. Even if that happens, it is not worthy of lamentation. The law of nature states, oh, this is a verse. Oh, this is from that verse. It says, it has in English here, but I memorized the Sanskrit for that one time. Sahastanam, sahastani, apadani, chatuspadam, falguni, tatramatam, jivo, jivasya, jivanam. This line most people know. Jivo, jivasya, jivanam. One living entity is food for another. Sahastani, sahastanam. Those who are devoid of hands are prey for those who have hands. And those devoid of legs, apadani chatuspadam, are prey for the four-legged. You see? The weak are subsistence of the strong. And the general rule holds that one living being is food for another. You see?
They're flies.
Oh, flies. Well, that's okay. They're friendly. They only kiss, they don't bite. I don't know what happened to her. Yeah, he's inviting me. Yeah, but it's biting my shirt. It's on my shirt.
Maybe it's closer to the wall.
Yeah, generally it's close to here. Close to the wall, there are more mosquitoes.
Maybe.
You can move it.
It's dangerous, I get too close.
Okay.
I guess we're going to have class here to burn a lot of incense here.
Yes, no, should I get?
Not now, because we're fighting before. What I do is I've done sometimes, get incense and put it behind it and smoke comes up. He's only going in the back, he's cheating. So much for the fact. Govinda. So this is the general rule that one living being is food for another. No one escapes this struggle for existence. Nor should Yudhisthira worry about his uncle and aunt's sustenance. They could live on vegetables in the jungle as the Lord's prasadam, thus realize the path of salvation. Birds and beasts are supplied their food. Therefore, Dhritarashtra need not, Yudhisthira need not worry, because Dhritarashtra would also be fed. On the other hand, if he were to become food for a tiger, why should Yudhisthira grieve? Nature's law states that every embodied being must die. Narada Muni preached hard philosophy to force detachment to appear in Yudhisthira's heart. He wanted him to remember that ultimately Krishna is the only protector. What's that Hindi phrase? You know the Hindi phrase? That's Hindi or Bengali? I don't know if it's Bengali. It's Bengali. Rake Krishna Marake. That's Bengali or?
Bengali.
Rake Krishna Marake, Mara Krishna Rake. What was the translation?
If Krishna wins, he can.
If Krishna wants to protect you,
protect
no one can kill you. If Krishna wants to kill you,
no one can protect you.
Okay. So Krishna is the only protector. Others, if Krishna permits, may protect one to some degree. But who but Krishna can protect one from death? Who can protect someone if Krishna has not sanctioned it? If one is not habituated to focusing on Krishna as one's protector, he will develop the tendency to depend on fallible soldiers, and thus his position will be precarious. At the same time, one should be dutiful. If one's duty is to protect others, he should protect them. If it is one's duty to accept protection, he should act accordingly. But whether protector or protected, one should focus his mind on Krishna, knowing that ultimately Krishna, no other is one's shelter. Narada Muni therefore states, rather than lamenting the fate of Dhritarashtra and his wife Gandhari, you yourself, Yudhisthira, should look to the Supreme Lord only, Sri Krishna, whose appearing as all-devouring time has now descended on earth to eliminate the envious from the world. The question is being asked, how does one look either toward or away from someone who is all-pervading? So we say that God is everywhere. God is all-pervading. So how do you look? How do you look for God if He's everywhere? You look up or you look down? Where do you look?
Within.
Yeah, but He's in there too. But He's all pervading. He's there, left, right, up, down, everywhere. Sridhar Maharaj says, "Look to the Lord." But where is He now? He's in Dwarka. That was at least 5,000 years ago. Krishna has assumed the form of destroyer, but His real form is bliss. Prabhupada said, for the devotees, Krishna's factual form is disclosed. For non-devotees, Krishna appears as Kalarup, which is His causal form. But this causal form of the Lord is not at all pleasing to the demons. Therefore, they think of the Lord as formless, in order to feel secure that they will not be vanquished by the Lord. Krishna says in Gita, Mrityu Sarvaharascham, I come to take away everything. So Prabhupada says that the demons or the atheists, they don't believe in God. There's no such thing as God. But death is God. That's what Krishna says in Gita, Mrityu Sarvaharascham. I take away everything. Sarvahara. As what? As Mrityu. So ultimately, even an atheist, even the agnostic or the atheist, he's forced to believe in God. Because he has to believe. He says, I don't believe in God. I don't believe in anything. Well, do you believe in death? Yes, well, death is God. So even the atheist ends at the end, he has to accept God. because Krishna says, I am death. I come and take everything away. I don't believe in God. Okay, well, do you believe in death? Yeah, well, then you believe in God, because God, death is God. And Krishna, so that's what it says. It says that So they can. It's very convenient because if you're an atheist, if you don't believe in God, then you can. You don't have to follow any laws of God. You don't have to act in any moral way or do whatever you want and exploit. And they say, "Oh, what do I care? There's no God." And all of a sudden, death comes. Well, what about this? Do you believe in death? Well, yeah, I can't not believe in that. So the God comes as death. But for the devotees, it says, for the non-devotees, God appears as death, personified. But for devotees, God comes in his personal form. So when they die, many devotees, most devotees have some experience of God when they die. Even they describe it. They describe that, how they saw the Lord. People say, oh, he's here. And then they say, who's here? I remember Bhakti Pramod Puri Maharaj, he was towards the end of his life, and he was in the samadhi or a coma or something. And then one time he woke up in the middle of the night and he said, he's here. And no one saw anybody there. And they said, who's there? Your Guru Maharaj, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. I said, no. And he said, Gauranga Mahaprabhu. Because they thought he was saying he, but actually he was saying she, but he said, he's here. And he said, Lord Chaitanya, he said, no. Then he said, who? And he said, Radha. And then he closed his eyes again and went into samadhi. Yeah. So many people, and even Godbrothers, our own Godbrothers and Godsisters, they explain how they had darshan and were seeing Lord Chaitanya or Prabhupada or Krishna at the time of death. Oftentimes, the devotees, when they die, they have a very blissful face. They're really smiling. And usually the non-devotees, you can confirm this by asking anyone who works in the hospital or an old age home. The non-devotees don't have such a smile when they die. Because they usually see the Yamadutes. The Yamadutes are the agents of death. And they're not very friendly. They come with some German shepherds, big dogs with them, super shepherds. And they come to lead the sheep home. The shepherds and lead the sheep home and come to take people to Yamalok. And they have chains and all red hair sticking out and big teeth and really grisly looking guys. You see a painting in the fifth canto of Bhagavatam, ISKCON. It's pretty scary. And they're very, and people, when you see something frightening, then your face registers your fear. The mind is registered on the face. And Prabhupada said the face is the index of the mind. So when they're fearful, then the face looks, so devotees, they will not face the Yamadutes. They don't see them. They see the Vishnudutes. Vishnudutes come, or someone's going to Vaikuntha, the Vishnudutes come, or he's going to Goloka or to Bhoma Vrindavan. And the Guruji comes. Guruji or Krishna comes. Radha comes and takes you there. There's no need for the Vishnudutes to come because you're not going to Vaikuntha. You go from this planet, then you go right, you take birth. You're transported through the skyways, transported to Bhoma Vrindavan, take birth in a Bhoma Gopi. You don't go to Yamaloka, and you don't go to Vishnuloka. And the Vishnudutas, they can't go into Bhoma Vrindavan. So there's a different arrangement for the devotees to be transferred, different airlines. Bhoma Vrindavan Airlines. You get transferred. You don't have to go get change planes. It's a direct route. So what does Prabhupada mean by this causal form? It says this causal form of the Lord is not at all pleasing to the asuras. Kalarup, the form of time, is Krishna's causal form. Through Krishna's energy of time, The world is forced to accept change. Seconds, minutes, hours, and all other units of time are all manifested from the potency of Krishna. Like a great stirring rod in a pot, Krishna's time energy moves everyone through their karma. Come on now, go along, move along. The time is devouring everyone, pushing everyone along. Time may elevate us one moment and smash us on the rocks of our fate the next. Today we are rich, and tomorrow poverty may overwhelm us. We may experience condemnation now and praise later. Time is unstoppable, and it forces us to change. For devotees, time ultimately means death. Time's out. Time's up. Times, they are changing. Devotees experience time as Krishna carrying them toward Him. That's nice. Time, in other words, time is moving everyone. Everyone's moving time. Then what's waiting at the end of the line? Death. Finished. But the devotees, time is pushing them and they're waiting for Krishna. He's waiting at the end. Oh, I'm going to meet Krishna. Like we see in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, there's a famous painting of Krishna embracing Gopakumar. Gopakumar is an archetypal devotee, and he traveled everywhere from this planet Earth. He was born in Govardhan. Then he went to Brahmalokan, Shivalokan, so many lokas. He traveled all over, place to place, time, moving along with time, and finally he went to Goloka. He met Krishna face to face, and Krishna ran and embraced him. Oh, you finally made it to the spiritual world. He embraced him. They both fell on the ground in a loving embrace, and they were rolling on the ground. And all the coward boys were saying, who is this guy? Well, you don't recognize him. He just came up out of nowhere. Time is unstoppable, and it forces us to change. Devotees may also experience time as Yudhisthira did, as beautiful Krishna, who is present in Dwarka. Krishna is all-destroying time, but he is also the Satchitananda Lord, who performs blissful pastimes with his relatives and citizens in the palace of Dwarka. Is there any comments on this? Any questions?
Pushed by the three modes, and we don't have free will, but we do have free will.
Well, in other words, every jiva has some free will, you know, but it's limited within the, it's free will being expressed through the modes of nature. So we think this is me. I am this bundle of tamagun. And no, I really want to eat this meat. I really want to drink whiskey. This is me. I want this. It's not you wanting it. It's a mode of ignorance wanting it. But you're making a free will. Yes, I will drink this whiskey. I'm making this choice. It's my choice, my free will. But it's not really free, because it's simply, this is the modes of ignorance or passion, whatever the body's made of, is making our free will express that way. Free will is only part, the real free will. It's some type of free will, but it's conditional free will. It's conditioned by the modes of nature. Because the soul also has free will. When one is pure, what is pure free will? Pure free will is the will to serve Krishna. In this way, I'll serve Krishna like this. Now I want to serve Krishna like this and like that. And this has nothing to, I'm not being, no pushing from ignorance or passion or goodness. There's no, this is his soul, and this is actually what you can say, free will. Will is not influenced. Now our free will is influenced. It's influenced by our sanskaras. It's influenced by our upbringing. It's influenced by our habits. It's influenced by our body. It's influenced by the modes of nature. There's so many influences. Why do we express our will in a certain way? this is my free will. But this free will is just coming, your parents have shaped your upbringing, your culture, your education, combined with your sanskaras, your previous good and bad deeds. They're actually shaping your expression of so-called free will. And then the type of body we have, the kind of body we have, the types of modes of nature, they're also playing a role. So it's a very adjusted free will, you could say, or filtered. This free will is being filtered through all these different coverings. And we have some knowledge, and as you get more knowledge, as you acquire more spiritual knowledge, transcendental knowledge, the more transcendental knowledge we have, the more free will we have. Because then we can understand why all this... In other words, before, someone would do something to us, and then we would, oh, he is insulting me. Now we have free will. I'm making a choice. I'm going to insult him, or fight him, or something like that. What we're discussing here is the time factor, willpower, the time factor. Krishna is the controller. And then Narada Muni is trying to enlighten Yudhisthira because Vidura came and enlightened Dhritarashtra. And Dhritarashtra and his wife Gandhari realized, well, this is not very good. That we're living with the family that killed our whole family. The Pandavas, and I had 100 sons, and they're all dead. Now I'm living with the person who killed my 100 sons. Dhritarashtra's 100 sons were killed by Pandavas. Actually, they're all killed by Bhima, I think. Isn't it? I think Bhima killed all 100 sons. And Dhritarashtra's blind, and he's a cousin of Yudhisthira. So he adopted him. He didn't know where to go. Where is he going to go? Live with his sons? Who can Dhritarashtra live with? His sons? They're all dead. So he's living with his cousin, or brother, or whatever, cousin, brother. And he was treated royally, but then Vidura came and said, listen, you're living like a household dog. What are you staying here? Get out from here. Go to the mountains. Die like a king. Go and meditate on God. So then finally it dawned on him. He left. They went to the mountains. Now Yudhisthira is lamenting, oh, where did my relative went? We killed all his sons. Now he's run away. Oh, maybe our hospitality is not good. Maybe he didn't like my wife's cooking. Somehow we didn't treat him right. He'll feel very bad. Now he went to the forest. What's happening? Maybe he got eaten by a tiger. Who's going to protect him? If I was here, I had my sons, Panch Pandava, my brothers, Yudhisthira and his brothers, we could protect him. Because he was like their uncle. Dhritarashtra was like their uncle. So he was thinking like this. Then Narada Muni came to Yudhisthira because they're such great devotees. Krishna lives with them. So Narada Muni comes to Krishna's darshan. And he says, he goes to Dwarka, and he says, oh, he's not here, he's in Hastinapur. So Narada Muni comes to Hastinapur. So then he preaches to him and says, what are you doing? Krishna's controlling everything. Why are you? It's his will. Everything's moving by his will. Don't lament, don't worry about, you can't protect your uncle. Krishna is protecting you, don't worry. What makes us attached to the body? This is the misplaced ego, because we have the chitta, then we have the mind, intelligence, ego. These four things. So the chitta is carrying the record from our last life. So many desires, so many good deeds, bad deeds, or samskaras, sinful deeds, good deeds. So that. That's carried, the soul travels with this subtle body. And then we get a gross body according to our desire from last life. And then the ego gives a sense of identity. The soul, through the ego, the sense of identity, we say, oh, this is me. It's illusion, obviously. It's the influence of Maya. It's the influence of illusion to identify with this body. This is the Maya Shakti. Maya makes us identify with this body because of our desire. We desire to have a material body from last life, so we get one. And then when you desire, then the desire is kept in the chitta, and then the ego expresses that desire through the vehicle of the body, so we become attached to it. It's the influence of Maya Shakti. This is the whole idea of spiritual study, study, understand the difference between matter and spirit. And that I, the soul, and categorically different from this body, as you said, the body is matter. Aparayamitastvanyam prakritim vidimeparam. Krishna says in Gita that beyond this material energy, there's aparayamitastvanyam prakritim vidimeparam. There's this higher prakriti, there's a spiritual energy, that's the soul. And that we have to realize. And then this attachment for the body will be transferred. Because attachment, the soul is attached to Krishna by nature. This is our, this attachment, the principle of asakti. Asakti means attachment. You can't take away attachment. Krishna says, Mamevamcho jivaloke jivabhuta sanatana. The jiva is my eternal part and parcel. We're eternally connected with Krishna. So when we get correct ego, then our attachment becomes correct. And we're eternally attached to Krishna. We're eternally connected with Krishna. But because of ignorance which is a product of Maya, then now we're attached to the body, material body. We're attached to this world, this material world. So when the ignorance is removed, then the false attachment is removed. Then with the influx of spiritual knowledge, we express the correct attachment. Yes, I'm attached to Krishna. Yes, I am Krishna's servant. This is the correct ego, the correct identity. This is the actual, the spiritual, you can say, the soul's intelligence. So then the body becomes meaningless, just as meaningless as the floor. But then we use, then the body becomes, the body becomes a vehicle of expressing our true ego. We're in it as long as we're residing, as long as the soul is residing in the body. And then he understands that actually everything belongs to Krishna. His body is also material energy. This material energy and this material body belong to Krishna. And as long as I'm driving this body or residing this body, I should use this body and every other thing in my command, under my temporary control, I should use it for the pleasure of Krishna. Because this is my ego, this is my identity, I'm Krishna's servant. This is the basis.
It's like making the best use of the worst bargain.
Yeah, Prabhupada said that, make the best use of a bad bargain. We can't use anything properly until we have knowledge. If you have a computer and you don't have any knowledge about how to work the computer, what will you do? You'll blow the thing up. You'll just ruin the thing. So any type of machine, we must have some proper knowledge. So the body, as you pointed out, is a machine. Krishna says that in Gita. Yantra Hridaya Maya. It's a yantra, Maya yantra. It's a machine made of Maya. Triguna Maya, material energy. But we, due to ignorance, due to illusion, we identify, this is me. I am this body. And then part of that ignorance is, it belongs to me. That's ignorance. If someone walks into your house and says, this is my house. You say, you believe that this is your house? Yes, I believe it's my house. I feel that, I think it's my house. I feel it's my house. I will it's my house. I really believe it's my house. It's not your house. No, it's my house. And you call the police, this guy is a nutcase. He's coming in my house and saying it's his. You see, this is an illusion. So the same thing, the soul, we're in this body and we're saying, "This, I am this body." And this is illusion. This is the force of illusion. It's like ignorance. When we come in knowledge, and someone says, "No, wait a minute, this is not your house. Your house is over here. This is your house is over here. Oh, this is my house." Somehow I got bewildered. I fell into Brahma. I fell into ignorance and I thought, this is my house. So we got turned away from the wrong house and got turned toward the right house. So this is what self-realization is. We get knowledge and say, oh, I'm not this body, but I'm another body. I'm not this material body, but I have a spiritual body. And this material engagement is not my real engagement, but spiritual engagement is not my real engagement. And this is not my real father and mother. And this is not my real place, but Krishna and Radha, Radha and Krishna are my father and mother. And this is not my real house, the material world, but my real house is the spiritual world. So this is knowledge. And then when you get that knowledge, then you get the understanding, and then get the revelation, and then you get the right idea, and your right identity from that idea. Well, this is me. This is actually me. And that, because that identity is eternal, and that identity is correct, it fits and feels good. It fits and feels good, and it works. It doesn't not work. Well, due to ignorance, we're identifying with the material body, which is made of desire, and it's carrying so many desires. That's what I'm saying. In the chitta are so many samskaras and vasanas, tendencies towards desire, samskara, and tendencies to act in a certain way, then vasana, or desires which rise from the samskaras. So as soon as you identify with the material body, then you have to identify with the whole package, which means the chitta, and then the mind and the intelligence, and then the identity is the ego. So the development or cultivation of spiritual knowledge is, we say, is purification. But that purification means to purify the identity. Actually, that's what we say, cheto dharpanam arjanam. Because they're mixed, they're all mixed together, and the chitta is like, it's kind of like a, what we call motherboard, but mixed in the chitta is the ego, the mind, and the intelligence. It's all like embedded together. So if you clean the chitta, if you clean the chitta, then all everything else becomes clean. Cheto dharpanam marjan. So it's, we have identity, but it's spiritual. We have body, but it's spiritual. We have a world, but it's spiritual. We have relationships, but they're spiritual. We have friends, but they're spiritual. And it's all eternal. It's just a matter of connecting, finding that.
Maharaj, even the material and your seeking from Krishna. Mm. So it should be actually spiritual when we connect to Krishna, even our bodies, when engaged in Krishna's service.
Yeah, everything, I mean, ultimately Krishna is the Supreme Spirit. But he has made this material energy that it has some limits, not limited, but it has some feature to it, that it's avyakta and avyakta, it's manifest and unmanifest. But just like one, like we say, the one electricity is one, but the same energy heats the house or cools the house, runs your microwave and runs your air conditioner. The electricity is one, but the functions are different. So ultimately, all the Krishna's energy is one. God is one. His energy is spiritual. But some energies act eternally in relationship with Him, and they're eternally existing. That's a spiritual energy. And some energies are acting in a temporary way. They're manifest. They're also eternal. Material energy is also eternal. But it's temporarily manifest and then unmanifest. Manifest and unmanifest. But that manifestation, unmanifestation, eternally. So everything about God is eternal. Energy is this energy of Krishna is basically one, but it acts in different ways. The antaranga shakti, or the spiritual energy, acts differently than the bahiranga shakti, by His will. The spiritual energy, antaranga shakti, is always eternally manifest. And this external energy, bahiranga shakti, is manifest and unmanifest. And we're in the middle, we're tatastha shakti, and we're also eternally manifest because we're spiritual. But we're in this body, so this body is the same way, because it's bahiranga shakti. It's manifest and then unmanifest. We're born and die. But the soul is always manifest, and it goes into another body. So when this soul turns its face towards Krishna, engages in His service, then this body becomes spiritualized. Prabhupada used the term spiritualized, like spiritual. It's still material. It's like you take an iron rod, it's steel, it's iron, and you put it inside the fire, and it gets very, very hot, red hot, it turns red in color. Then you take it out, and you can use it to burn things. But by its nature, it's still iron, but now it's become so much associated with fire, it's taken on the qualities of fire. It's fire-like. It's fireized. So our body is still protein and carbon and hydrogen and fat and all these things. Chones, carbon, hydrogen, oxygen, nitrogen, and sulfur. These five basic elements. But when it's engaged, when the body's engaged in Krishna's service, then it becomes spiritualized. Jivan mukta siyuchate. Iha yasya harir dasya. Karmana manasagira. There's one verse. Iha yasya harir dasya. Karmana manasagira. When one is engaged as a servant of Hari, Haridas, his karmana, his works and deeds, and his thinking and thoughts and feelings, karmana manasagira, and his words, gira, his speech, then he's jivan mukta siyuchate. The jiva is actually liberated. Because what does liberated mean? What does the term liberated mean? We say mukti or mukta jiva. Liberation means that you never die, never die anymore. So when you're engaged in Krishna's service, you're liberated. Even though the body will go, but then when you leave the body, you won't take another birth. As I said, liberation means no more birth, no more death. So jivan mukta siyuchate. So the jiva who's engaged in Krishna's service is liberated. So this is a point you were making, quite a correct point, that when one is engaged in Krishna's service, then he's actually in a spiritual energy. And Krishna's telling that in Gita also. What is that verse from Gita? Do you know that verse in Gita? Daivyesha gunamayi. Mama maya daratiya. Mami veye prapadyante mayamitam taratite. So Krishna's saying that those great souls, those smart people, Mahatmas, they understand, they come by acquiring transcendental knowledge, they realize that life is meant for the service of Krishna. And everything else is superfluous, secondary and unnecessary, but it's just, we're being pushed that way to engage in these superfluous activities due to our prarabdha karma, our previous karma. There's nothing more that a human being should do than serve God. This is really the whole purpose of human life. And because he owns everything, he's controlling everything, he's created everything, including us. And he wants our love, and he wants us to serve him. And he's a very nice person. He's a very good friend and a very good master. He's not mean, and he's not envious, and he's not desirous. He's self-sufficient. He doesn't require anything from us. But it behooves us, it's good for us to work for him. It's good for us to join his company. So he comes and says, listen, you're suffering. Why? Come, join me. Join my company. Sign on. Government job. No, I have my own concern. I have my own concern. Independence. I don't want to surrender. It's scary. Surrender is scary. I have so much to lose. I'll forfeit so much. I'll lose so much. I have to give up so much if I surrender.
Devotee of Lord Krishna on this Karma Bhumi, as compared to the Devas in the heavenly planets, because sometimes we hear that the demigods are controller of the different administrative activities on this material planet, and at other times we hear that there are some people are there in the heavenly planets due to the accumulation of piety or pious deeds of past life, and then that's just one is Karma Bhumi, another one is
Bhog Bhumi.
So they are just relishing or like benefiting the acts of their piety,
enjoying the results of their good deeds.
Yes, Maharaj. So when eventually they come down to the Karma Bhumi and take to the path of devotional service to finally get Swarup Siddhi. So what is the question is, what is the position of a devotee on this current bhumi as compared to the devas in the heavenly planets or people residing in the heavenly planets?
Well, here or there, everyone's trying to enjoy. Living entities living in Earth planet or in heavenly planets, the basic operation is the same. They're trying to enjoy, and they're enjoying, and we're trying to enjoy, and we're enjoying and suffering. Because this is a middle planetary system. There's seven planets above and seven planets below. Bhur, Bhuvaswa, Janulok, Maharlok, Tapalok, Satyalok. That's seven planets above. And then below there's Rasatala, Talatala, Atala, Patala. There's so many seven planets below. This is the middle planet. So on the middle planet, this earth is in the middle. There's seven above, seven below. So on this planet there's some sukh and some dukkh. And in lower planets there's also so much happiness. In the subterranean planets, Rasatala, hellish, so-called hellish planets, where they have hellish happiness. The happiness of tamagun. And the earth planet, we have a little bit of mixture of tamagun and rajagun. Then in the higher planets, they have sattvic and raja. Not much, there's not much tamagun up there. So they're also enjoying. They're enjoying their senses. They have a more subtle body. They have a material body and they're enjoying their senses. And we have a material body and we're enjoying, but there's some pleasure and some pain. And the heavenly planets above the earth, as you mentioned, the celestial regions, Swarga, etc., mostly they're enjoying. As described in the literatures, there's no disease there, there's no death there. I mean, seemingly no death. They live a long, long life, there's no pregnancy there, there's no birth control, there's all these things. No orphanages, no abortions, so many complications here. So everyone just enjoys. In the very last year of their life, then they have children. It's described like that. A lady can have a child or something.
The last year.
Yeah, that's what they say. Right before they die, they have a child or whatever. Because someone has to take birth up there. So they need a body. Because they have to get the body from somewhere. Now, on that heavenly planets, generally what I've heard is that these higher planets, this is called Karma Bhumi. This earth planet is called Karma Bhumi because here one can engage in activities by which he'll get elevated or degraded. But in the other planets, he's simply spending his money. It's kind of like you work in Delhi and earn your income and then you go on vacation and spend it. You go somewhere and spend it. So the earning place is Delhi, the workplace, the earning your money and spending it somewhere else. So the higher planets, they earn their punya or pap here, and then they enjoy or suffer here. Of course, if they're very pious, then they get elevated to the higher planets. And on the higher planets, pretty much they don't engage in so much. They can't really. We don't hear any description that many people are doing sadhana. It's not a place of sadhana. Like they say, dharmik kshetra, kuru kshetra, mamavetha suyutsavaha. The first verse in Bhagavad Gita. This earth planet is called Dharmakshetra Kurukshetra or Dharmakshetra Karmakshetra. The word Kuru, it means the family of the Kurus or Kauravas, but it also means karma. So this is a place where actions are done, dharmic actions, religious actions are done here, and you get the fruits either here or on the heavenly planets. So generally in higher planets, whatever you do here, you go to some planet and you'll stay there and enjoy. And if you've done a lot, as you see in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, you may go to a higher planet, Swargaloka, and then you enjoy, but you did so many good things after the enjoyment, then you get elevated again to Janaloka, and then elevated again. So all that elevation or that promotion on the heavenly planets or higher planets is all the fruits that you've accumulated from this planet. And then sometimes, a few people, because Narada Muni travels different places, he also visits heaven. And when they meet a sage, a rishi, a great rishi like Narada Muni, some of the people on the higher planets, they may take up some sadhana, but it's very, very rare. Generally, in the higher planets, are just living out their good deeds, basically. And some of them have such good deeds that when their life is finished, they'll go up to a higher planet. And most of them, when their good deeds are finished, then they'll leave that heavenly planet and come back to Earth. And they're described in Fifth Canto Bhagavatam. that those demigods who know that when their punya is out that they will again fall down to the earth planet, then they're praying, oh, if I had to take, when I leave this planet, when I die and have to take birth, please bless me that I take birth in Punya Bhumi, in Dharmakshetra, or Dharma Bhumi, India. Because then I'll get a chance to engage in good deeds and get back to heaven, or even go higher, or even maybe take up some other line of yoga or bhakti yoga and get total liberation. So this is a basic what's going on. And then it's described that those living entities on Janaloka, in Swargaloka, above Swarga, Sombur Bhuvaswa. So in Janaloka and Maharloka, Janaloka, Maharloka, Tapaloka, Satyaloka. And these planets, they move up. I mean, if they have that punya, if they have that karma fall, when at the end of Brahma's day or when there's annihilation, they move up to the next planet. And when the Nadashesh is burning up the universe, start at that time of destruction, then they move up to Brahmaloka, then they get liberated. They can also get liberated if they have that. So these living entities on higher planets, they're not really, no one's engaged really in any sadhana. They're just doing bhog. Some few rare people may, by chance, meet Narada Muni or some king or whatever and take up some sadhana. And from there, from the heavenly planets, he could leave there and go to the spiritual world. He could get mukti. It's not very common. Usually this is the mukti stali. It's from the earth planet. Everything is, this is the place, this is the workplace. Work means the place of action. You can act in the line of karma, karma yoga, or just karma action, or karma yoga action, or jnana yoga action, or bhakti yoga action. This is the action, the field of action, dharmakshetra. So this is a speciality of this planet. That's why they're praying. Well, they say that in one sense we're fortunate to live on the earth planet. Because here's where all the avatars come. Of course, they also come in the higher, not only the earth planet, that's not quite right. The avatars appear in different planets. And Bali Maharaj, he appeared in Vamanadev appeared in Bali's kingdom, and that was Indraloka. So they appear in different planets. But Krishna appears on this planet, Vrindavan Krishna. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appears on this planet. So that's our good fortune. And that we care about Krishna and Gauranga. So that's what I can think at this point about some of the differences. Here, we know pretty much what's going on here. But all the anomalies, that's why it's a place of enjoyment. People read about Swarga and they read about the pleasure, then they, at least in the old days, now people don't care anymore. They don't hear anymore and they don't care anymore. If there's no hearing, if you don't hear about something, you can't know about it. If you don't know about something, you can't desire it. You can't desire something you never heard of. Either in this life or last life. Think of that. Can you desire something you've never seen and never heard of or never experienced?
No.
So if you've never heard about Swarga, then how can you have a desire to go there? So that's the arrangement of Kali. Kali keeps everyone in his grip because Kali's grip is ignorance. So no one can move. When you're in someone's grip, you can't move. If someone is grabbing if a bear is hugging you, a bear hug, you can't move unless you have power to overthrow that bear. So ignorance is like a bear hug. Everyone is in the grip of ignorance. So we can't move anywhere. We can't move anywhere. And that's exactly what Kali wants. He wants everyone to stay right where they are. Don't go anywhere. Stay right here in Kali Yuga. Don't get liberated. Don't hear about heaven. Don't hear about God. Don't hear about anything. Just hear about eat, drink, and be merry. These are the songs we sing, and these are the desires we have. Because our desires are shaped by our knowledge, and our desires are shaped by what we hear. So the advertisements and all the advertisements in television, newspapers, all working for Kali. So they're filling us up with lots of sounds. Buy this, do this, drink this, eat that. So we get all knowledge of all these things, knowledge of Kali's offerings. And we hear about Kali's offerings. And then we get desire. And so advertising is based on that, creating desire. So Kali is doing good advertising. It's his age, the age of Kali. Right? So So he's reigning. Kali is reigning. He's reigning. He's the Lord. He's doing a good job. Everybody. The main way to keep people from going forward and keep people in bondage is by ignorance. Every political campaign, they know that if they want to keep the people in bondage, they have to keep them in ignorance. All these communist regimes and others, they block the knowledge. They burn up the books. Fahrenheit 451. There's a movie like that when I was a kid. Because Fahrenheit 400, there's Fahrenheit and centigrade. 451 is a degree by which paper burns. 451 degrees Fahrenheit is, I don't know, 300 and some degrees centigrade. So if you have some that much heat and you put paper in it, it burns up. So this movie was all about this political regime that took over, wanted to take over this people, and there were so many ancient books and knowledge and higher. So they gathered all, they went to everyone's house, the army went to everybody's house, and, hey, you have any sacred books here, any kind of books? And they gathered them and put it, and they would gather them in the town square and they burn them all up, and that was called Fahrenheit 451. It's a long story, but so this is what Kali does. He keeps everybody in ignorance. Ignorance is bliss, where it's folly to be wise. Why are you studying all these books? Just stay in ignorance. Why do you want to come out of ignorance? Tamasimam Jyotirgamam. That's the way, when you read the Vedas, that's what they say. Listen, go to the light of knowledge, the light of purity, pure desire, pure thinking, pure feeling. Because our desire present, our present line of desires is counterproductive. Our present line of thinking, our present line of feeling, and our present line of acting is not bringing us our desire, our cherished result. We want happiness, security, peace, fulfillment. And so we are pursuing it through ignorance. We're using ignorance to accomplish our mission. And we're failing life after life. So therefore the acquirement of knowledge is absolutely necessary. Higher knowledge. Higher knowledge will bring us to a higher level of thinking. A higher level of thinking will bring us to a higher level of feeling. And a higher level of feeling will bring us to a higher level of desiring. And that's called the spiritual platform. And this is reality. The reality, the beautiful. Sri Krishna, reality, the beautiful. We all know what we want. But we're ignorant. We don't know how to get it. So the only thing separating us from what we want is ignorance. What we want is Satchitananda. We want eternality and awareness, knowledge, cognition and happiness. But what are we getting? What are we ending up with? A lot of suffering, a lot of aches, a lot of aches, a lot of pains, a lot of frustrations, a lot of headaches and migraines, aches and pains and loss and gains, and in between lots of migraines. This is material life.
Because we perfectly know how to stay in darkness and life after life, it's the same thing, and
world. Yeah, we're trained. We have everyone has PhD in ignorance. PhD in ignorance. Avidya. What is your major? My major is what are you studying? I'm studying avidya. I'm studying avidya, and I'm about to get a PhD in avidya. I want to be successful in my mission of life. I want to make sure I take birth after birth because I like suffering. I'm basically a masochist. I want to subject myself to repeated suffering. Life of misery. I've dedicated my mission statement is a life of misery. Misery likes company. They have a phrase like that. So we're in good company. There's 5 billion miserable people here. How many Chinese, miserable Chinese are there? 2 billion miserable Chinese and 1 billion miserable Indians. And the balance is everybody else. The 3 billion, out of the 6 billion people in the world, half of them are Indians and Chinese.
Maharaj, even the demigods are ignorant.
Hmm?
Even the demigods.
Demigods, they're in another kind of ignorance.
What is that?
Because they're in a covering. They're ignorant. Ignorance means not being self-realized, not realizing yourself. So they're also in ignorance. They're also in ignorance, but they're so much absorbed, and that's the benefit of the Earth planet. Because in the Earth planet, there's misery. And misery makes you think. But when you're enjoying, you don't think. Love is blind. So the heavenly planets, they're so busy enjoying, they can't think. So they never think about self-realization. That's like rich people. Someone's really rich and beautiful. Hey, what is this yoga and medicine? I'm enjoying too much. So people that are enjoying a lot, they can never take up self-realization. Why? Because I'm already self-realized. The self is the body, and the body is meant for pleasure. And I'm having so much pleasure. So that's also ignorance. Actually, they're so foolish, they think that they don't even see that there's so much suffering that they're actually facing. Of course, Sadhu has to point that out to them. So in the heavenly planets, because we can hear, we can point it out to someone, and they can maybe think, oh, I'm suffering. Oh, you're enjoying. Well, will you enjoy old age? Will you enjoy disease? Will you enjoy death? Because no one can escape these things. Everyone, the richest, most beautiful person, the so-called big enjoyer, billionaire, he's still facing disease. Upset stomach, eats too much chapan bhog, he gets sick, 2 days he's throwing up. But in the heavenly planets, there's no old age, there's no disease, and there's seemingly no death because life is so long. Of course, they die. So it's hard to preach up there. There's no preaching up there. There's no ISKCON up there in the heavenly planets. There's no Gorgon ISKCON.
Because how can they really experience miseries in life? Then no one can say, like, you know, leave this miserable condition and take to the
So that's why they're really unfortunate in one sense, because they're more ignorant, although they're not you can say victims of tamagun in terms of their lifestyle or their culture or what they eat, or they're relishing or enjoying sattvagun and rajagun. These are the modes of nature that they're wrapped up in. But that's also the icing on it all is ignorance, because they're still ignorant of themselves, of the soul. So it's like high class ignorance. Yeah. It's like Oberoi ignorance. It's not just east of Kailash ignorance. It's not downtown ignorance or Harlem ignorance. It's high fi ignorance, first class, executive class ignorance. But they think that they eat, drink, and be merry, and tomorrow will never come. Let's party, all right. Every day is a party. You're drinking, smoking, dancing, ladies, music, party, all right. You don't see anybody dying. There's no disease. Beautiful forests, Nandakanan gardens, voluptuous women and powerful men. Enjoy day and night, day and night, day and night. Some people read that and say, oh, that sounds good. Let's go there. And then they try to act into so many yogis and pujas to go to the heavenly planet. Because they want to enjoy. Because here they get that idea, they get that conception. Because their intelligence is mixed with ignorance. They don't understand that the real enjoyment is when they're connected with God. Enjoying the service of God. That's the greatest pleasure. It never ends. That's what we're meant. That's our position. That's our real, eternal, unshakable position. The soul is immovable. When the soul is situated in its eternal position, it can never be moved. Krishna says, "Nayati mam eti sorjana." Once you come to the spiritual position, you can never be moved. Once you come to the spiritual world, you can never again come out. Janmaishvari was janma karma cha me divyam evam yovati tatvata tyaktvam deyam punar janma nayati mam eti sorjana. There's no more birth. Going there, you don't return. It's the point of no return. The point of no return, the place of no return. Excuse me? In heaven, there may be some harikatha, but sometimes, but people, they don't pay much attention to it. Narada Muni goes there sometimes, and there may be some talks, but we don't. They just do it like background, maybe some background music, or it's just like here. They have Bhagavad Saptaha, and people go and they sit there. Oh, yes, very nice. Oh, it's a good story. Oh, very nice stories. And then what happens when they leave? Nothing. Business as usual. So if there is Harikata on heavenly planets, or maybe, because Narada Muni's visiting there, other rishis go there. And you hear about them speaking to different kings. And they hear different things. But they don't take it very serious. Because their objective there is to enjoy. So they're too much involved and too much engrossed with that karma. That's their karma. That's their line of action. They're there to enjoy. It's a place of enjoyment. And they've gone there. Swarga. They've gone to Swar. They've gone to Swaloka, my place. They've gone there to do their thing, to enjoy. Reap the results of their punya. So they don't want to hear about it. Just like if you go to some rich person and say, "I want to tell you about Krishna." "I don't want to hear about it, did you?" "But no, we want to give some lecture." "Okay, you give some lecture. Okay, here's a donation, now go job." So you give lecture and you simply release a lot of hot air and have a kirtan and go away, and the people don't. It's like entertainment. So this is the place. The Earth's planet is a good place. And it's all, mostly Krishna comes here to teach. It's a teaching field. The school of hard knocks. You must have heard that phrase maybe, I don't know, in India. The school of hard knocks. Knock. You know what knock means? It doesn't mean this. we're speaking English. Knock means when you knock somebody down, the car hit the kid on the road and knocked him down. And he died, and the mother cried. Right? And the guy kept going. So you got knocked down. So the school of hard knocks means you get knocked, this school, get knocked on the head. Hit on the head, beat on the back. I really get kicked around in the school of hard knocks.
Every day, one thing or the other. Maharaji, there is one small thing related. Like Maharaji, as we learned that there are the divine and the demonic qualities, and like...
You learn, you have them.
Yes, Maharaji.
You learn to recognize your own, the qualities you have.
Maharaji, now... Like in Kali Yuga, both the divine and the demonic, they are in the same body.
Mm.
So Maharaji, now we have...
You have some divine there? I didn't find it. I couldn't find any divine in my body. I only found demoniac quality. You look a little like a demigod, so maybe you have some divine qualities.
But
your thing says here, your recorder says noisy envy. So I don't know, it seems like you have blessed divine qualities. You see this, you read this thing, it says envy.
What is the environment?
No, but I don't see that. It says noisy, N-O-I-S-Y-E-N-V-I, envy. So apparently you have some demoniac qualities there, at least in your tape player.
Only demoniac qualities.
Noisy envy. That's how an Indian guy learning how to spell English, he'll write it like that. ENV, because I means E. So envy. Oh, envy. E-N-V-I. Envy. No, it's a Y. E-N-V-Y. Y, but that's ya. Ye. Envy. N-E. So this is a correct Indian spelling of envy. So what's happened?
But now that we desperately want that this demon should leave our body, right? And we are.
Why? He's nice.
And we want to turn our face to Krishna, but this demon Maharaj keeps on bawling and is like we're totally helpless, right?
We have to stop feeding him. If you have a guest in your house and you want to get rid of him, then you stop feeding him. You know the story, Prabhupada tells the story once. That, you know the story? It's a nice story. We can tell the story from lighting up things. There was once this king, and he had a princess, a daughter, and she was supposed to be married. So these three princes came to the kingdom. Suitors. To size up the situation. They came there and they were from neighboring kingdoms, very powerful kingdoms. And they came to the king and said, "Listen, we would like to stay for some time as your guests and get to know you, and maybe one of us, you know, will have the fortune to become your son-in-law. And we'll win the hand of your beautiful princess daughter." So the king said, "Okay, here's some rooms, you stay here." But the king really didn't like these suitors. He didn't really like these princes very much. But he didn't want to create any enmity with them because they had very powerful fathers. So they may attack his kingdom and cause problems. So he wanted to treat them nicely. So he treated them nicely. But then he was thinking, "How can I get rid of them? Because I really don't like them, and I don't want either one of them for my son-in-law." So then he couldn't figure out how to do it. So then he talked to his minister. Minister's always smart. So he said, "Minister Saab," or "Mantri Saab, I have this problem. I have to, these three princes, I want to get rid of them. What can I do?" Oh, very easy. "You tell your... You go to the kitchen. I'll go to the kitchen. I'll tell the cook to stop cooking with ghee. And let's see what happens." Okay, very good idea, very good idea. So they were serving these guests out. Nice bhog, everything, prasad, but no ghee. Day after day. And after a couple of days, one of the princes said, "I don't know. This king, you know, we're eating this food, we're getting fed, but there's no ghee. I mean, after all, we're kshatriyas, we're kings, we need a little taste. It's not very tasty, and maybe he's having some financial problems. And if we marry into this family, it may be not so good. Anyway, that princess is so pretty, so beautiful. Anyway, so they stay on. So then he meets with the prince, the king meets with the minister and said, "Listen, these guys are still here." And he said, "Yeah, they're pretty attached to your daughter." Okay, now go to the kitchen and tell your cooks to stop using salt. So now they started cooking with no salt and no ghee. And these are kshatriyas. The guests, the three princes were kshatriyas. So then they're eating, and then one prince said, "Listen, this is getting ridiculous. First no ghee for several days, now no salt. I really have my doubts about this king." Because of course in those days, hundreds of years ago, salt was very expensive. It was actually a very rare thing. Now salt is quite prevalent. It was very, very rare. "So I think this king may be some poor type." No ghee and no salt. This is not very good. So the one prince said, "Listen, I am going. I'm going back to my father's kingdom, and I'm rather hungry. You guys can. This girl is so beautiful, but not that beautiful. I can't go without salt and ghee for so many days. So he left. So he very graciously begged the king, please don't mind, I have to return to my kingdom. I have some business there. My father's called me. And he said, okay, I'm just going to go. So then now there's two princes. So the king was getting enthusiastic because the minister gave a good idea. So he says, minister, now what about these two guys? What do we do now? So then he said, well, I think now we should tell your cook in the kitchen not to serve any sweets. So now there's no ghee, no salt, and no sweets. So the princes were talking, what's going on here? No ghee, no salt. Now there's no sweets. For 3-4 days we're eating this food, it can't taste it, and there's no treat, no nothing. This is really... Anyway, she's so beautiful, this princess. I'll carry on somehow. So then it's going on. And then after some days, the one prince, he said, I can't take it anymore. I'm going to look for some other princess. Forget this one. You can have her. So then he left. So now there's one prince left. And there's no ghee, no sugar, no sweets. I mean, no salt, no sweets, and no ghee. So now, they went to the minister and said, what about this guy? He said, now, I think you should, what to do now? So he said, all right, no spices. No ginger, no pepper, no jeera, cumin, anything, haldi. So now they're cooking, and the prince is eating. He said, oh, I have no competition if I can. And that princess is so beautiful. And several days going by, and but I can't eat this food. There's no salt, there's no spices, there's no ghee. There's not even, and even if I could eat it, or at least I could get some treat, there's no sweet. Oh, anyway, let me go a couple of days. And then after a few, four or five days, he couldn't eat. He was like getting so... He said, if I stay here any longer, I'm going to die. So then he went to the king and said, I have some work to do, I have to go. So then he left. So the minister was gave good advice. So Prabhupada told, he said, this is how, if you have an unwanted guest, then you starve him. You don't feed him. And he'll go. So this Maya, this Mr. Demon inside us, we should starve him. Don't give him any ghee, don't give him any salt, sugar, and no spices. And then he'll say, oh, this guy is no fun. I don't want to stay with this guy. I'm going to go somewhere else. But rather, we feed him so nicely. This demon inside of us, we feed him so nicely. Nice rajma and kheer and puris and halava. And he really feels he's quite healthy. Kutila. And he doesn't feel like moving out. He's quite established. He's established a beautiful house over there inside of our hearts. And it's very hard to push him out. So we have to get help from some very strong... We have to make some alliances with some big political figures in the city, with the DM and home minister. And then maybe they can help us and move out this... person from our property.
I think you can build him off.
So this demon has come, so we have to take shelter of the parampara and Guru Parampara and Vaishnava Mahajans, and in this way we can get sufficient strength by making an alliance. If you're a weak country, then you have to make an alliance with a strong country. So we're very weak, so we have to make alliance with the Guru Parampara and the Vaishnava Acharyas. So by always reading about their lives and teachings and always praying to them and trying to serve them, then they will come to our assistance. They will back us. We have a big backing. We may be small, but we have a big backing. The Lord is behind us. So in that way we take encouragement. We take encouragement by taking shelter of a very powerful person. You feel somewhat fearless. You feel secure. In the shelter of a powerful person, you feel fearless and you feel secure. So this is the most powerful person is God, Krishna, and his representatives, and Guru Parampara. Prabhupada once, one disciple, he went to Prabhupada and he said, Prabhupada, my astrologer said I have Rahu. Rahu is aspecting my 10th house and making it very difficult for me to do my bhakti. And Prabhupada said, what is this? Rahu is in your 10th house. But Krishna with his little toe, he can kick 10,000 Rahus out of your house. So why are you worried about Rahu? Yahoo or Rahu or... Anyhow. Yahoo mail or Rahu mail or email or Gmail or Punjab mail or... any kind of Bombay mail, any kind of... we don't care. We just care about Krishna. So he can cover the whole universe with three steps. Vamana Avatar covered the entire universe. So how much... our territory is very small. Certainly not as big as Bali Maharaj's. So if we take shelter of Krishna, he can easily cover the territory of our heart with one step, and the other two steps he can kick out all the demons. So if we allow Krishna to take over our heart, then we're successful, we're victorious.
One of Sadhguru Maharaj's book, Prabhupada writes in a letter to one of the disciples about the obstacles on the path of devotional service. So he says, I can kick any obstacle on your path of devotional service with a kick of my foot.
Kick of my shoe,
provided you allow me to.
Yeah, that's the thing. No permission, no admission. If we don't permit the guru to take over, then he can't be admitted. If he's not admitted, then he can't kick out the demons. That's called Guru Parashraya. So surrender is an ongoing activity. It's day to day, moment to moment. It's not a ritual performed in front of a fire where you surrender your name, Susie Q, and you become Sharadiya Dasi, Bharati becomes Bhanunandini Dasi.
Krishna.
It's not like that, or Devi Dasi actually. You're married. It's not that we just surrender our name in some ritual and then that's it. No more surrender. Taking shelter and surrendering her. They are the life of the devotee. That is his business. That's our business. This is our product. What are you doing? Well, I'm dealing in exports. Some people say, what is your business? Say, my business is exports. So we're dealing in surrender. It's our business, surrender and taking shelter. Yeah, we have an export business. We're exporting our anarthas. Yeah. We're exporting our anarthas and our aparats. Would you like to buy some? Would you like to buy some anarthas and aparats?
We have a factory.
We're producing quite a lot. It's called Avidya Incorporated Unlimited. I mean Limited. Avidya Incorporated Limited, LTD. We specialize in anarthas and aparats because these are all products of ignorance. Due to ignorance, we make aparad, and due to ignorance, we hold on to the wrong things. Nobody. I locked it. And due to ignorance, we're attached to our sins and our sinful desires. That's all due to ignorance. So we maintain our anarthas due to our attachment. And we're attached due to ignorance. So our anarthas are greed. Greed is an anartha. Greed, anger, lust, envy, these are anarthas. These are useless things. Anart, not art. Art means valuable, useful things. A greed and anger and lust and envy, these are all worthless things. But we're attached to those things due to ignorance. So this avidya is a root cause of anartha and aparad. The three A's, right? Reading, writing, and arithmetic. This is a joke. When we grew up in America, they said you have to learn the three A's. Reading, writing, and arithmetic. They're not A's, but reading is R and writing is W and mathematics is A. So the three R's, these are the three A's. We have to cross over the three A's. Avidya, aparad, and anarthas. And you can only do that by surrendering to Guru. Guru Parashraya. If we can find such a guru to teach us the path of bhakti and the path of surrender, he puts us on the pathway of surrender, because his feet are the first step. Guru's feet are the first step. That's why Rupa Goswami says, Guru Parashraya. Take shelter of Guru's feet, Padashraya. So that's the first step in surrender. Put your head at the feet of Guru. That's the first step. And then you're on the path. You're on the path of surrender. Now you've taken, that's the first step on the path. There's a long path. And the path of surrender begins at the feet of Krishna. At the feet of Guru. And I gave it away. And ends at the feet of Krishna. Krishna Pad. Krishna Pad, Krishna Charanashraya. You're illuminated. You become illuminated by your devotion. After so many lifetimes of ignorance, now you're facing the light. But it's not over in one day. Surrender is not over in one day. Oh, I surrendered. I surrendered to Krishna. I got initiated. Hari Bol Krishnadas. I surrendered. I moved into the temple. I promised to follow these principles. I'm chanting every day. Oh, okay. Easy street. No, it goes on and on and on. Layer after layer after layer comes up. Gross ignorance is on many layers. Bodily identity, skin identity, bone identity. Skin identity, bone identity, eye identity, nose identity, mouth identity, ear identity, mind identity, desire. So many identities we have. These are all upadis, designations, identities. Sarvapadi vinirmuktam tat paratvena nirmala. Vishikeshi vishikeni sevana bhakti uchate. To attain that seva, bhakti seva of Krishna, we have to cross over all these upadis, designations, coverings, false identities. Sarvapadi vinirmuktam tat paratvena nirmal. Nirmalam, we must become transparent, pure, clean, white. I saw this Yadubar, he released some pictures of Prabhupada. Yadubar is Prabhupada's disciple, Yadubar. And there's some, what do you call it, like DVD. And has Prabhupada from 1965 to 1970. And his devotees are speaking, they're showing just pictures, Prabhupada in different places. And sometimes devotees are speaking that were there. Oh, I remember Prabhupada. So this is 1965. maybe 65, it says 65. And Prabhupada was in New York for 1 year, 65, 66. He was in Butler, Pennsylvania, then New York. And he met this yogi, Yogi Mishra. He must have read in Leelamrita. He lived uptown, he was very wealthy, and he was teaching all these middle-aged, fat rich people how to do Hatha Yoga in his apartment. He had a yoga studio in his apartment. And Prabhupada met him, and then Prabhupada was staying in some dharmashala type thing, YMCA, it's like a dharmashala for vagrants and street bums and drunkards, basically. Prabhupada was living, not exactly dharmashala, but it's a bumshala. drunkshala. All the drunkards, it's too cold at night in the street, so they go in there and sleep, pay 25 cents and get a bed. So Prabhupada was staying there. Inconceivable. This Vaikuntha man is staying there. It's a dormitory. A big, big room and just beds. They're all drunks and drug addicts, and Prabhupada's staying there. So then he met this Yogi Mishra in the store one time or something, Yogi Mishra, and then he said, "Where do you stay?" I don't know where he met him because they're living on opposite sides of town. I don't know. He met him somewhere. And he said, "Why don't you come visit me?" And then Prabhupada said, "Oh, how are you eating?" He said, "Oh, I'm eating here and there, any restaurant, whatever." He said, "Oh, I can cook? I'll cook for you." He said, "All right, you cook." And Prabhupada was cooking for him, Yogi Mishra. And he was very sick at the time, Yogi Mishra. And he writes in the Leelamrita, and he says, that Swamiji, he came and he cooked for me. It was so good. Because he's Indian, and he's Brahmin, and he's in New York. And then he's eating, I don't know, all junk over there. And then he said, "Prabhupada nursed me back to health." What he called him, Swamiji. "Swamiji nursed me back to health with his tender, loving affection and his cooking." That's so good, because Prabhupada was an expert cook. Really expert. And so he was feeding the yogi. And then Prabhupada would sometimes attend his sessions and speak also to them. He would ask, he said, "Swamiji, you give some lecture on Gita to these people." So Prabhupada would just speak. Because this guy was a Mayavadi. Yogi Mishra is a Vaishnava Brahmin. I mean, Mishra is a Brahmin name. Jagannath Mishra. Nimai Mishra. Mishra. But he was speaking Mayavad philosophy himself and teaching Gita but Mayavad and teaching Ashtanga Yoga. So then Prabhupada would just speak about the Supreme Personality of Krishna. He didn't care, as it is. And Gita Krishna says this, that he is the Supreme Personality. It's the opposite thing. But Yogi Mishra, he liked Prabhupada and he let him do his thing. But we never saw any pictures, we only read about it. So now on this film has pictures. You actually see what this guy is. And he's totally dark in color. They're both sitting there. Because he had a yoga retreat in Millbrook or something, north in the country. Like you have Delhi, then you have farm in the country somewhere, farmhouse. So in the country somewhere, he had a yoga retreat. And he would go there on the weekends. And sometimes Prabhupada would go there later with his disciples in 66. And it shows Prabhupada in the yoga studio in New York, and he's sitting there in the guy's apartment, and the Yogi Mishra is sitting there on a chair, and all these ladies are on the floor in front of them. It's all ladies, and they're going like this, and then one lady was going like this and trying to do this yoga, something like this, and there's a lady next to her, and there's no sound, there's no, just see. And there's another, all Western ladies, and she was trying to put her arm something like this, and she couldn't get it there. And she said, "Hey, help me. Come here, help." So then that other lady you see in the film, she takes her arm, and she's holding it, trying to stretch it back where it's supposed to go. And Prabhupada's not in that particular section. I think they were just filming the guys to give you what somebody filmed. I don't know who filmed, but anyway, this film is there. So you just see these ladies doing yoga. Because you read about it, that he was teaching yoga and probably visiting cook lunch. We don't read the Prabhupada went to the yoga class, so we just see this guy's. But that's where the first we got to see the darshan of Yogi Mishra. It's really dark, like some guy from UP or something, really dark. So now, and the next scene is that they're at this Millbrook, which we read about, that they went to the yoga retreat in the country. And it shows these hippie disciples cooking. And then then Yogi Mishra is sitting next to Prabhupada and they're taking their vegetarian food together at his retreat. Prabhupada's eating whatever the people cook. And they're also, I think they're vegetarians, of course. So Prabhupada's sitting there, and then Yogi Mishra's next to him. Yogi Mishra looked like a Negro. He looked like a totally black guy. And Prabhupada's like shining, so gold. And Prabhupada's big, beautiful lips and nose. And this guy has a short, funky nose. And he didn't have any earlobes. He had really small ears. And Brahmins usually have... He didn't have any nice features, really, at all. Prabhupada's aristocratic nose, big opening, really huge ears, and big lips. And, oh, it looks so... You look at this. I could really see what there's Prabhupada's. They're both eating, sitting there together, and the disciples are serving them. We don't see it. We didn't see. Maybe some of Prabhupada's disciples were there too, but you couldn't tell because everyone had long hair, beards, and everything. Nobody had dhotis. It was all. So this film is there. It's really, really interesting. I was looking at. So, and this is all on tape, but. Prabhupada was so effulgent. You could even see it. When you compare, when you put people together, it's easy to see who's got the stuff. Prabhupada said you can judge a man by what he says and what he eats. By his speaking. Of course, his behavior also, but Prabhupada, at that particular juncture, he said, by what he eats and what he says. Because some people may say many things, and then they go and they eat non-veg. I said, well, this guy's an animal. He's a, as we used to say in America, he's a carnivore. We became vegetarian when we were 18 years old. So we used to have, there's vegetarians and carnivores. Well, look at the carnivore. Das Goswami was Raghunath Das Goswami. He was married even. He was already married. But he was very keen on joining Lord Chaitanya. But he was the only son of a Zamindar, Govardhan Majumadara. Govardhan Majumadara, Haranya Majumadara. And he was the heir to their dynasty or state. And his wife is described as being more beautiful than the goddess of fortune. In other words, she was pretty, really pretty. And they were fabulously wealthy. They were Kaurapatis, his father. And he was very charitable. He was his father is described as Vaishnav Praya. Vaishnav Praya means almost a Vaishnava. Because the symptom of Vaishnava, whether he's rich or poor, or whatever varna or ashram he's in, or no varna, avarna, the symptom is that he is, the Swarup Lakshana is that he's surrendered to Krishna. The Tattva Lakshana may vary. But the Swarup Lakshana, the primary characteristic, he accepts that Krishna is my Ishtadev, and my goal of life is actually to serve Krishna and to love Krishna. And so many other things may come between me and Krishna, but in my heart of hearts, that's all I want. So this is actually the Swarup Lakshana of a Vaishnava. He may be Kanishta Madhyamutam, but Majumadara, Raghunatha's father is called Vaishnav Praya, because he had regard for Vishnu and he had great respect and regard for the Vaishnavas and for devotees, and he gave lots of charity to the devotees. But his main object in life was to enjoy. He was surrendered to the body, the idea of enjoying. He wasn't, in his heart of hearts, he did not have this Swarup Lakshana of a devotee. So he's called Vaishnava Praya, almost a Vaishnava, because he didn't have this Lakshana, he didn't have this attribute of surrendering to Krishna. So he sometimes would hire 12 guards to keep an eye on Raghunath, because Raghunath sometimes would run away from his home, leave his beautiful wife, leave his fortune and position, and run away to try to join Lord Chaitanya in Puri. And the guards would catch him and bring him back. And again he would try to run away and he would get caught. And then the wife said, listen, isn't there anything you can do to keep Raghunath, tie down Raghunath or keep him here? And then the father, he said to his wife, Raghunath's father, he said, how can we tie down this boy? If millions of dollars doesn't tie him down, then what can tie him down? And if the most beautiful lady in the world cannot tie him down, then what can tie him down? If money and woman cannot tie down a man, then what can tie him down? There's nothing that we can do to tie him down. Because our son has tied his heart to the lotus feet of Lord Gauranga. So no matter what we do, what can we do? So then finally, the arrangement was made where he went to Panihati, which is nearby, not very far from his house. And there he met Lord Nityananda. And Lord Nityananda engaged him in the Panihati Chiradahi festival. He used his wealth to feed all the Vaishnavas some chip rice and yogurt and chip rice and condensed milk, kheer and bananas mixed together. And they satisfied them, and he satisfied Nityananda. Nityananda put his feet on his head and he got the Nitai Kripa, Nityananda Kripa. Then he went back home. And once he had the mercy of Lord Nityananda, then everything became arranged. One night, in the night, his Diksha Guru, Yadunandan Acharya, came to Raghunath Das Goswami. He said, well, listen, my Pujari has fallen ill. He's given up his service in the temple. Or he's home and he hasn't come for his service. Maybe you can go in and visit him and tell him to come and do his service. So when Yadunandan Acharya came to Raghunath Das's house, he was let in because he was the guru. And then Yadunandan said, listen, I have to take Raghunath to do some work in my temple. So then the guard said, oh, they relaxed their control over Raghunath. They said, oh, he's going with his guru. So it was in late at night, it was only Yadunandan, Acharya, Diksha Guru, Raghunath, and Raghunath. He said, please, you can go to my Pujari and tell him to prepare, do his services and be there tomorrow morning for Mangalarti. Yes, Guruji, I'll do that. So then Raghunath, then the Guruji left him, and Raghunath said, oh my God, I'm by myself. So he went to the Pujari and said, you can wake up and do your Mangalarti tomorrow. Then he thought, this is Krishna's arrangement. This is Nityananda's arrangement. Nityananda Kripa, Nityananda Dhoyamoy, Nitai Gunamani Amar, Nitai Gunamani. This great jewel of Nitai, he's a jewel, full of jewel-like qualities, and so his quality of compassion has been shining on me. So now, this is the time. Jao! So he ran, because Lord Chaitanya was in Puri, he ran all the way to Jagannath Puri. Usually it takes 1 month to get there, but he got there in 10 days.
Yeah.
Something like 10 days. He ran day and night. And he went on the back road, not on the main road. So it's more difficult, more cumbersome and more painful. Now in the country and through the country and bush.
Dangerous also.
And dangerous. Very dangerous animals, snakes, cobras, tigers, whatever. Especially in that area, going from Bengal to Orissa. And that's where all the tigers are, in that border of Orissa and Bengal, Secunderabad. It's called Secunderabad or something like that. And you have to go through there to go to Puri. And even today there's a tiger reserve there. Tigers live out there. You can have darshan tigers. So then he got away. The soldiers went to find him. They couldn't find him. So he was successful. There's only two choices in this world. There's demons, there's asuras and sura. Demons and devotees. At what degree demon? Only 27.5% demon, 79.4%. Oh, my mother's a demon? But she loves me. She loves me dearly. She made apple pie for me and cold milk. And she fed me with her own breast. And she rocked me in her arms and she kissed me when I fell down. She kissed me and said, it's okay. And she did all good things. Well, we have to call a spade a spade. What's what? We can't be weak-minded. Ridaya Dorbalya, weak-hearted. We have to see things according to Shastra, Shastra Chakshus. That doesn't mean we disregard. We have Adar, we regard our mother, we respect, we regard, we help, we care. But if it says right in the fifth canto of Bhagavatam, Guror Nishishyat Pitaro Nishishyat, one has no right, one does not have any right to become a guru or a father or a mother or a teacher unless they can deliver their dependents, their children, their students, their disciples from the cycle of birth and death. So if our parents, our mother, father, uncle, cousin, etc., if they have not pointed us towards God and not impressed upon us the need to serve God and realize God and worship God, then what can we say? They say, oh, you don't need so much God, you just be a good man and you go to school and you pay your taxes and you take care of your family. That's called morality. That's not Dharma. That's just morality, and it varies from country to country, morals. It's just some system to keep some peace. At any rate.
I
want
to meet Lord Chaitanya.
They met Lord Nityananda.
Nityananda
and Haridas.
Yeah, finally. Came
to kill them.
Yeah. So when they took the shelter, then like, they were delivered immediately, or then they got the, like started like they surrendered and then the never process started. I mean,
no, they got special mercy. Because if you they were everything happened at once. You can see in Chaitanya Bhagavat. They had so many sins. It's a whole chapter about Jagai Madai, Chaitanya Bhagavat. You can read Vrindavanas Thakur, the liberation of Jagai Madai. They had so many sins that the scribes, the secretaries of Yamaraj, they were going on strike. I said, okay. They said, we can't write anymore. Our hands are breaking. There's like 20 secretaries are writing all the sins. This sin, that sin, this sin, murder, rape, robbery, drug trafficking, this, that, terrorism, everything. And they said, Yamaraj, we quit. We're on strike. We can't. They told Chandragupta was the chief secretary. They complained to Chandragupta, then Chandragupta went to Yamaraj and said, look, all my secretaries are on strike. My assistant secretaries, we can't keep records anymore. Look at all these books. So many record books, like these old Indian offices, all these books piled up. All the Yamaraj, all these copies, they're all Jagai Madai sins. So they have huge stockpile. Papa Karma, Papa Beach, piled up. And then Nityananda and Haridas, they were preaching, they were a preaching team. They would go out every day, preach together. Preaching partners. And they saw Jagai Madai was in the street. And Jagai Madai were totally drunk. And there is lying in the street. And in broad daylight, they're sleeping. And then Nityananda saw there's some good candidates. This is Patita Pavan. These are the most petite, the most fallen, and they need to be pavan, purified. So Nityananda, they went over there. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Rama. Hey, wait, shut up, what's that? Hey, what's that crap? Hey, Madai, who is that guy? I don't know, it's some guy goes now. I don't know, it's doing the holy name thing. Hey, shut up, you're waking, you're disturbing them to sleep. And then Haridas, they're chanting. And Haridas said, oh, Nitai, these guys are dangerous. These are very dangerous people. They're the villains of the town. Everyone's afraid of them. No, we must deliver them, Haridas. We must give them the holy name. So they went closer. Then Madai, he had one clay pot of wine, and he had just finished drinking it. Tong! He broke it. Hey, I told you to get out of here. Stop that. Chant. He threw it at Nitai. Hit him in the head. Cracked his head and blood's coming out. And I said, you should take, you follow me, you poor people, you should take the holy name. Hey, you get out of here, and I'll, next time I'll kill you. So then Harita said, Nittai, come, let's go. They're serious. So then they left. Then the report came to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that Nittai was... He said, why, who's done this? And Haridas said, Nittai was quiet. And Haridas said, all these Jagai and Madai threw this pot. What? You offended my devotee? And then Gauranga went with his chakra. Vishnu avatar came out from within him, Sarva avatari Gauranga. And he went there and said, you've done, you offended my devotee. You should be destroyed. And then Nittai went and he said, oh, what are you doing? How you're known as Patita Pavan, you're the Patita Pavan avatar, the liberator of Kali Yuga, and if you just kill them, then how will you be called Patita Pavan? Now this opportunity to gain the fame and establish yourself as no one's more petite than them, and oh my Lord, I petition you, please bestow your mercy on them. So on Nittai's appeal, he appealed on their behalf. And then the chakra disappeared and Gauranga started to consider their case. Then Madai, maybe Jagai, he came and fell at the feet of Gauranga. He said, oh please my Lord, please forgive us and please don't kill us. Then Mahaprabhu, he said, listen, he put his hand out and he said, you surrender, you give me all your sins. You give me all your sins, all your pap you put in my hand, you surrender. I will take everything. He said, no, my Lord, we can't do that. We're too sinful, too fallen. You could never carry the weight of our sins. It's terrible. And Lord Chaitanya said, no. And Lord Chaitanya gave him a tulsi leaf. He said, like a sankalpa. He said, you take this tulsi leaf and then you put in my hand. You give me all your sins. You surrender. So then Jagai did that, or together they did that. They agreed to surrender. When they put the tulsi leaf in Gauranga's hand, and for one moment his body turned black. Like Kali. Just black and golden body. And the acharyas say this indicates that he took all their sins. And then again he was golden. He took all their sins. Sarva dharman prityaja, mam ekam sharanam vraja. Antam sarva papevyo moksha yishmi mahashucha. Don't be afraid to surrender. Don't be afraid to give everything to Krishna. So they were free from all their sins. And then Lord Chaitanya embraced them. And when he embraced them, then he gave them his brain. Jagai and Madai. At that point, they became, this is the answer to your question, they became free from all their sins, were exonerated and absorbed and taken by Lord Chaitanya. Then he embraced them and gave them brain. And then he told them, now you should serve the Vaishnavas. So then they made, you make one bathing ghat. So they made one bathing ghat. He said, all the Vaishnavas that come there, you should wash their feet with the Ganga water and humbly serve them. That became known as Jagai Madai Ghat. Jagai Madai Ghat. I can't. You saw that ghat? I never saw it, but I think it got washed away. Ganga changes course. Big change over the years. And so that ghat is not there, I don't think, anymore. So they got the full mercy of Lord Chaitanya all at once. Well, it's like that. If we surrender 100%, Krishna says, as you surrender, I reward you. You surrender 100%, 100% reward. Like this. In 1 second, Prabhupada said, one disciple asked Prabhupada, how long will it take to become Krishna conscious? Because this is the Krishna consciousness movement. And I've been moving for some time. I've been moving for some time, but I don't seem to be getting very far. I'm moving on like a little mouse and what they call a treadmill, a little metal thing with bars, a little circle, and mouse is running, but the circle keeps turning. And it's like a little circle like this. He's in a cage. And the mouse is sitting in the middle of the circle. He's running, and the circle just keeps spinning. So I'm moving, but I seem to be getting nowhere. What's going on? When can I attain this perfection? And Prabhupada said, you can attain perfection in Krishna consciousness in one moment or in a million lifetimes. So we want to somehow close down the gap. We don't really want to wait a million lifetimes. Maybe 1,000? 1,000? 500? 250? It's not bad. 250 lifetimes. If you go a maximum 100 years each, how much is that?
2.5 years.
2.5 years?
100 years?
20, how many lifetimes?
Or 2,50,000.
Oh, that's too long. That's too long. Okay, well, what if we wait 100 lifetimes? 10,000 years. Oh, that's too long, because Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement only lasts for 9,500 more years. Oh, we better speed up the process. We better not keep going for 100 years. Maybe 80 lifetimes. It should be 80, maybe 80 lifetimes more. 80 times, that's 8,000. Then we still have time, and then we can get in there and still get some mercy. It should be one. It can be one. It's all possible. It's up to us. It's not up to the teacher. It's not up to the teacher whether we pass the course or not. He's teaching perfectly. He's giving the teaching. But if we don't come to class, and we don't take notes, and we don't study, we don't apply ourselves to the subject matter, who fails? The teacher or the student? The student. So Krishna is doing his part, as usual. He's supplying everything. And he gives so many tests, many, many tests. This school has too many tests. It's one of those kind of expensive schools. They do too many tests, too many exams, all the time examination. But the reward is great. The reward is the greatest possible reward. So we have to, as we've said in numerous lectures, be enchanted by the goal, the sadhya. Have a clear conception of the sadhya, the goal, and then and be attracted to that goal, and be interested in that goal. Be so interested and so attracted to that goal, that we become captivated by it, we become possessed by it. We want this. We want this goal. We want this more than anything else. We have so many wants and so many so-called needs and desires, but we should want this thing most of all. At least, let's say, in our heart of hearts. And we should want the goal of the Prem Seva of Radharani, to have a Sarup, attain a spiritual form, and enter the spiritual world, Vraja Gokul, to serve Radharani and her camp and her group of servants, loving servitors. Radharani or Krishna, whoever, whatever Krishna, whatever his plan is for us, whatever his intention. Let's using Radharani's as our goal. Either Krishna Seva or Radharani service, but they're together, so it's Radha and Krishna service. And that Nitya Dham, that Sat Dham, that Braja Dham, Sri Dham Vrindavan, Sri Dham, that beautiful Dham, that opulent Dham, that Dham of Sri Radha Dham. This is the prospect. This is a sadhya. Sadhya means the goal to be attained by the sadhana. The goal of our practice. The goal of our endeavor. that which we are working towards, that which we are working for. A pure spiritual body, live in the eternal world, spirit, spiritual world of Vrindavan, very beautiful land, we were full of cows and birds and peacocks, and Yamuna and Giriraj, and Dwadasavan, and just one Leela after another Leela, Julan Leela, and then Jalkeli, then Banvihar, then the cows, and singing and dancing, taking prasad with Krishna, on the way to Krishna. This is so, if someone doesn't, because you have to know what, where you want to go, and then you have to know how to get there. Right? So this is has to be clear. How is you get in your car and someone says, where are you going? I said, I don't know. And so, well, why are you driving? Well, I have to drive. The car is meant to move, and I'm driving. I'm the driver. So the car is meant to move, so I'm sitting in the car and I'm driving, and I'm moving. But where? Where are you going? Oh, around the block, down the road. So this car, this body is a car, and this soul is a driver. And the Prabhupada used to say, this is the definition of a crazy man. If you meet someone on the street and say, oh sir, what is your name? Who are you? I can't say, I don't know who I am. Well, where are you going? I don't know where I'm going. So, where you came from? I don't know. I don't know where I came from. Well, what? Then you might think, well, this guy's crazy. He doesn't know where he's going, doesn't know who he is, and doesn't know where he came from. So that's everybody in the whole material world. Who are you? I'm Mr. Jones. What's up, Mr. Jones? Will you be forever Mr. Jones? Where are you going? I'm going to work. What do you think? Now he's coming out of work. Where are you going? I'm going home. My wife and kids. Where else? Acha. Now on Sunday, where are you going? I'm going to Akshardham. I'm going to play. I'm going to ISKCON temple, Darshan. So he doesn't, you know, or so he has some idea. But it's not a very permanent place, permanent situation. It's not a very intelligent thing because you can ask the bird and the bird will say the same thing. You can ask the dog and say the same thing. Say, Mr. Dog, excuse me, Mr. Dog. Oh, who are you? I'm Mr. Dog. What do you think? Ruff, ruff. Mocha, where are you going? I'm going to work. Mocha, where's your work? I'm going, what's that? I'm going in a field looking for a rabbit. Mocha, then he has a rabbit. He's eating the rabbit and saying, where are you going? Oh, I'm going home to my dog wife. My dog wife and kids. So it's like a dog. Doesn't know where he's going. Just saying, I'm going to work and going home. So devotees, we have a clear conception. Krishna conception. Very clear conception. Who I am, where am I going? How have I got to where I am? What has brought me here? How have I received this body? How have I taken this birth? And what can I achieve? What is to be achieved with this body? What is the actual purpose of this body, purpose of this existence? This is human life. What's that question again?
Like how to fix our sankalpa, that is the most difficult thing in the world.
What do you mean by sankalpa? Resolution, right? Resolution.
Day-to-day,
like,
it is part of our surrender.
Well, the sankalpa is like a statement. For example, if someone is doing a yajna, or he's taking a sankalpa, I'm going to perform this yajna, and whatever result comes in this yajna, I'm going to offer whatever, such and such. So then, to perform that yajna, he has to do so many things. So he has to collect so many things and engage so many people and make so many arrangements and then sustain that yajna for 1 month and maybe a 1 month yajna. Some yajnas are very long in the old days. Sometimes the yajna would be a whole year. When they were doing Naimisharanya, when the sages established over there, they were prepared to do a 1,000-year yajna. every day for 1,000 years. And then Shonaka Rishi came there, Sutta Goswami came there, I met Shonaka, and the whole discussion is there. So that's a big elaborate arrangement. So to sustain them through all that, through all those trying times, they had their sankalpa that I'm going to do this yajna and I get this result and offer it here or there. So our sankalpa is that, or you can say the sankalpa doesn't change. The day to day changes or challenges come, or challenges or difficulties, but the sankalpa is the same. So our sankalpa is that I want to attain pure love of God. I want to. This is Krishna praying. This is the goal of life. Prema Pumartha Mahan. That I want, and love of God means you may be more specific. More specific. Specific or more particular or exact. Means that love of God. Okay, what's love of God? It's a name on a signboard. Oh, love of God. Oh, I love God. Means I want to attain the prem seva. I want to serve. Love means service. I want to attain the prem seva. I want to attain the loving service of Krishna in the spiritual world, in my spiritual body. I have a spiritual body, and I have love within me. I have the potential to love God in a particular way. I want to realize my fullest potential. Before we can formulate a sankalpa, in attraction, the mind works on a principle of attachment. The mind easily gets attached to something, or anything and everything. But that principle of attachment works, it depends on attraction. If we're attracted to something, then we get attached. And it's very easy for the mind to think of something we're attached to or attracted to. So the whole thing about hearing about Krishna, reading about Krishna, and hearing so much about Krishna is to become attached to Him, become attracted to Him. He's attractive. He's very attractive. So when we're attracted, then automatically the mind runs to whatever you're attracted to. Automatically, you don't have to meditate. The husband has to sit down and do asana, then pranayama, then mudra. Then he has to very forcefully withdraw his mind from everything else and meditate on his wife. No, automatically, without any asana or any pranayama or any mudra or any kind of dharana or any kind of other thing, as soon as he closes his eye, his mind runs to his wife. Because he's attracted and he's attached. Your mind will run wherever you're attached to, wherever you're attracted to. Automatically, it's automatic meditation. Samadhi. It's total absorption. Samadhi. All intelligence fixed on one point. Samadhi. Samadhi. Complete. Sama. Sankirtan. Sama. All thoughts, all discrimination, everything. Di means intelligence. Everything fixed on one. It's automatic. It's effortless. Oh, I'm such a yogi. Husbands are great yogis. Wives are great yoginis. They automatically, easily absorb themselves in meditation on the opposite. So we have to become attracted to Krishna, and that attraction will come by hearing about Him, hearing about His Nam, Rup, Guna, Leela, chanting His name, hearing about Him, hearing about His Mahima and glories. As we become more and more attracted, then we become more and more attached. Attachment grows by association. The more you associate with someone, the more you become attached. When you first got married, you weren't that attached to your husband. But now it's impossible to get detached. You're cemented together like araldite. You're stuck on each other. At least, hopefully. So Krishna is like that. You have to. That's like guru or anything. The more you associate with someone, if there's some attraction, which means liking, it's called rag and dvesh. If there's some rag, some attraction, some liking, and you continue to associate with that object of liking or rag, then you becomes rati, becomes asakti, becomes attachment. So if you like the guru, you have some rag for the guru, and then you associate more and more, then you become attached. right? And that's the same. But as a guru, you can see and interact and see it's more tangible. So that's, the guru takes the principle of attraction and attachment, and he dovetails it. He takes the principle of attraction and attachment, and he redirects your material, the principle of material attraction and material attachment. He directs it. First, you become attracted and attached to guru. Then he deflects that and brings your attraction and attachment to Krishna. Because through, he's transparent. He's a transparent medium. So he, because Krishna comes as guru, to attract you by the sound vibration. Not the physical attraction. Gurus may be ugly or fat, thin, tall, anything. But by sound vibration, he attracts the consciousness. He attracts the heart. And then you serve his vapu, the guru's vapu, and you serve his words. That increases, and that means you're associating. When you associate with the guru's words and the guru's body, then you develop your attachment. Then that attachment goes to Krishna, because attraction to guru and attachment to guru they actually transform into attraction and attachment to Krishna. They're actually non-different. If the guru is guru, if he's transparent, if he collects the attraction and attachment and keeps it for himself, or he gloats over it, or he relishes it, or he enjoys it, the audience or the popularity, then he becomes a block. Then he doesn't help anyone. No one gets helped. And by associating with such a guru, one's attraction and attachment for Krishna does not develop, does not arise, does not increase. So this is the first point. Before someone makes a sankalpa, they have to have some familiarity with what they're going to make a sankalpa about. Right? So if you want to make a lifetime sankalpa in bhakti, then that is the object of our sankalpa, is Krishna. So then we become knowledgeable of Krishna, and we become somewhat attracted to Krishna and attached to Krishna. And then we can say, okay, now I know something about this Krishna, Krishna Tattva, Namrukuna Lila. I understand something about the goal of Krishna consciousness, the sadhya. Now I put that in my hand and I touch my forehead. I put water, sometimes they put water in their hand. Because water is a medium for some sankalpa, but water. Sometimes you can put tulsi leaf also, water. And then you say, oh my Lord, and whatever life is left in my hand, whatever energy I have in my hand, whatever ability I have, whatever I have in my hand, I want to offer that at your feet with the desire that you will accept me, that you will accept me in your eternal loving service in Vrajagokul, in Vrindavan. And this, I don't want anything else. I'll carry on my duty, whatever duty you've given me. I have some position, I have some duty in this world, duty to family, nation, etc. I will carry on all that duty, but this is my ambition. This is my driving force. This is my main ambition in life, is to attain your eternal loving service. And really? Krishna says, really? This is your sankalpa? Well, do you know what my sankalpa is? My sankalpa is to screen out all the bogus applications. To screen all the bogus applications. Because we get so many people apply for positions in this college. 10,000 people apply, but only 300 are admitted. You must be knowing about that. Good school, how many people apply? Many thousands. So many people make an application and make their sankalpa. So then I have to test. So I have to be prepared. Whenever you set your mind, sankalpa means setting your mind to do something, basically. We're always making sankalpas. All right, I'm going to cook dinner. I'm going to cook now for my family. That's a little sankalpa. And then you go to cook, and then so many tests come up. Oh, we ran out of gas. Well, I didn't know the gas burner was empty. Oh my God, it's 8 o'clock. How am I going to get a bottle of gas now? I don't have an extra one. Oh my God. Oh, I had that electric stove. Oh, I'll plug that in. Oh, electric went. Oh my God, I can't cook. There's no electricity. And there's no gas. What to do? Oh, I go to my neighbors. Oh, can I use your stove and cook my husband's dinner? Somehow, you have to do the job. And then you do all this, and then you get it all back, and then it's all ready, and he comes home, and he sits down, and you serve it out. And you don't even tell him that he went the next door and cooked it. Because you had this sankalpa, I must do this. So many tests will come, but because you say, no, I have to do this, I must do this. I have to, I must, I want to. There's a degree of intensity. Oh, I have to do this. Oh, I must do this. Oh, I want to do this. So when you want to do something, then that's much more intense, because that's your own will is behind it. When you have to do something, that's somebody else's will that's forcing you. You have to do this. Clean your room. Oh, okay, I have to do this. My mother's will on me. But then, I must do this. Well, that means I feel I have some will to do it, but it's also my mother's will, because she told me to clean my room. But when it's, I want to do it, that's your will. Your mother didn't even ask you, I want to do it. So this is the sankalpa is, I want to love Krishna, I want to serve Krishna. And then Krishna says, all right, now I will test you. How much you want to serve me? How much you want to love me? This much? This much? This much? Oh, it sounds like a good idea. I was trying Art of Living and Art of Dying, and I tried this thing and that thing. I tried Scientology. I tried S training. I tried some Hatha Yoga. And now the Hare Krishna people, they came, they preached to me. They said, this is a good thing. Chant Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. And offer your food to Krishna. And come to Mangalarti. And read Bhagavad Gita. You'll become peaceful. So I tried it. It seems okay. It's nice. But, okay, maybe I look and investigate a little more. And then I meet some other people. Oh, it's a good thing. You go ahead, you try it. Oh, okay. Some association. And then I get involved with this Krishna consciousness, and I find out, oh, it's very, very hard. It's very, very difficult. Very, very demanding. Rising early, chanting all these mantras, and reading, so much reading. And I don't know if I can handle it. So Krishna tests. So first we have to investigate. We have to investigate the prospect. Is it worth our investment? Before we buy some stocks in some company, then we investigate the company. Is it a reputable company? A company? Does it have a good record, good products, this and that? And then we think over and inquire from any brokers, etc. And resumes, we read the resumes, and then we maybe make a decision. But that's why we do lots of reading, so we can make a firm decision. What is this thing really all about? What is Krishna consciousness all about? Is it just about chanting Hare Krishna and taking prasadam? Is it just about going to the Sunday feast, or what is it really all about? What does it entail? Hey, can I get involved? Can I really get involved with it? So we should be a little careful before we take sankalpa. Sankalpa is a fruit of a realization, of some realization that we get by hearing. Hearing, then you accumulate some knowledge. When knowledge is there, then some desire. Then as you sit with that desire, it may become stronger and stronger. And then you can think whether to make sankalpa. This is what's required here. These are the demands here. This is the prospect, the highest possible prospect of the soul. Highest possible attainment. And our logic and our reason tells us, our intelligence, our discrimination, our intelligence and logic tells us that this is the best prospect I've ever heard. This is the best, the highest prospect and proposal I've ever heard in my whole life. That one can have a divine, an eternally divine loving relationship with God and an eternal spiritual world, which is full of variety and full of fun and pastimes and enjoyment. This is a very appealing prospect. That God is a person and I'm a person. We have personal relationship and personal dealings. And there's no cheating there and no exploitation there. It's very attractive. You read Krishna book. I remember I read the Krishna book first time in 1974. And I thought, this is what a world this place is, Vrindavan. And because I was more attracted to this side of things. I read about Mathura and Dwarka Leela in the same book. I had seen all the big palaces and all the demons and fighting and this and that. And I didn't so much attracted to that. But when I read about Krishna's Leela, the coward boys and swimming in the Yamuna and imitating the frogs and dancing with the gopis and the monkeys and stealing yogurt and all these cute little antics, I was captivated. I really... So this is really... What? Because I heard about heaven and heard about some idea about the spiritual world, and I grew up as a Catholic, Roman Catholic. And there's some place called heaven, and God lives there, and good people can go there. So I should be a good people. I'm not a bad people. But I didn't know much about the particulars of the place. I didn't know, wasn't much product description there. And I didn't have any, I thought, well, I didn't really tell me anything, well, what do I do there? Even if I go there, I had a very vague idea of what I would do there. I would float, I had different ideas as I grew up. Sometimes I thought, well, I'll go there and I'll get, everyone gets one cloud. Everyone gets one cloud, you know, Meg, and you lie in that cloud and you just float around. You just float around in the spiritual world. And you sometimes you look up and you see God and whatever he looks like, I don't know. But then you just float around and it's like kind of like sleeping and feeling happy and sleeping and no cares. And that was one idea I had about heaven. Another other idea I thought is that when you go, if you go to heaven, then they give you one harp. Harp is like like a veena or something like that. It's a musical instrument called a harp. It has strings on it. So when you get there, they give you one, when you go there, they give you one set of wings. When you get a set of wings and a spiritual body, a set of wings, and you get one harp, and you just fly around, ding, 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 ding. And the God is there. He's on a big chair. He's sitting on like a big throne or asana, and all the and everyone just flies around. And it goes ding, 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 and he's smiling, and everyone's smiling, and it's like a nice place. There's no disease, and no death, no. So, couldn't get a very clear idea from these Christian holy books. And I would ask different people, they said, no, you'll find that out when you get there. But I wanted to be there now. Be there now. So then we stumbled across the books of Prabhupada, Vedavyas and Shukha Muni, and we discovered so much description. The third canto of Bhagavatam, so much minute description about Vaikuntha and Vaikuntha Vasis and what they do and what their vimans are. There's families there, husbands and wives are there, everything's there, and so many descriptions. It's quite astounding. Could never imagine. Then as we go further and further, we find out, oh, everyone, get your own spiritual body ready there, ready and waiting. Everyone has a spiritual body ready and waiting. It's like someone, you got a letter in the car and said, you got a letter in the mail and said, listen, come to the Honda, come to the, let's say, Porsche dealership wherever that is, if there is one. But the port where they're selling Porsche cars, Porsche showroom, there's a, in America they say dealership, and they also have a showroom at the dealership. But anyway, you come to the Porsche showroom, and there's one shiny brand new Porsche waiting for you. And the keys are here, and you come and you drive it out. You say, wow, I got this letter. $250,000 car is waiting for me. Okay, let's get over there. Say, hey, look, I'm Mr. Patela. I got this letter. It says, where's my car? Oh, see that blue one over there? Oh, yeah. That's yours. Here's the keys. Oh. So it's like that. Every soul has a spiritual body waiting for them. As a gopa, as a gopi. And it's already there. It's already. You don't have to make it. You don't have to build it. You don't have to paint it. You don't have to decorate it. Everything all ready to go. Like the car is ready to go. When you buy a car, you don't have to put seats in it. You have to paint it. You have to put seats in it. You have to put transmission. You have to put a trunk, carpet, anything, armrest. Good car, everything's there. You don't have to add anything. No options required. It's got everything. It's got all the options. Power this, power everything, and stereo, and everything. When you buy a $250,000 car, that's, you got everything. That is, there's no, those cars don't have options. that's everything. That's the whole Chapin boat. All you need to do is drive. So the spiritual body is there. You don't have to add any options. No options. It's all ready. We have to connect with that. Krishna connection. It's only a matter of stretching our consciousness. Conscious connection. We have to stretch our consciousness from here to there. We have to touch Krishna. We have to touch Krishna with our consciousness. And that's what chanting is all about. Chanting Krishna's holy name means touching Krishna. First you touch Krishna's name, then you touch Krishna's fame, right? Nam gun, nam rup gun lila. You touch his form in terms of his qualities and his lilas. You contact them, you touch them, and then when you realize your spiritual body, then you can actually embrace Krishna's form. Touch Krishna's form directly. Now it's an indirect form, indirectly touching by contacting. A touch generally means skin to skin or body to body, that's touching. But contacting also is there. So we touch the name, touch the qualities, touch the lila, and finally we'll connect with the form. But the form also manifests in a sequence. Nam reveals its form, and the form and its qualities and pastimes, so they come. If Nam reveals Krishna's form, then you have qualities and pastimes. They come together. That's fast. It's slow. Going from Nam to Rup is slow. When you have Rup, then you have Guna and Lila. If you have my form, then if I'm in your house and you have my form, then I'll be doing something. Right? I'll be active. So that's lila. And when I'm active, I'll show my qualities. Okay. So then you have guna and lila. So what the big distance is touching nam and then touching rup. First you have to realize that Krishna's name is Krishna. It may take a while, long distance. And then that realization is there. Then when Krishna is pleased, he'll reveal his form and name. And some taste is there. Form has, something that has form may have taste or may not have taste. A floor has, this marble has form, but it doesn't have taste. There's no ras. With no ras, there's no taste. But Krishna's form, he's Rasaraj. Krishna's form is full of ras. So when you contact Krishna's form, then you get taste. Right? They're chanting the holy name, and the holy name reveals Krishna's form. And when you're contacting Krishna's form and the holy name, then you're tasting. Nam Ras. So the form of Krishna is full of taste. And that taste is very satisfying. And that's what, and the devotees, when they taste that, the form of Krishna's name, then they want to keep tasting more and more. And everything else becomes detasteful. Everything else becomes detasteful. You got that? Detasteful or detestful? Detestful. Detasteful means we don't want to test it. Detestful means we don't want to test it and we don't want to taste it. Materialistic people, materialistic activities, materialistic music, materialistic books, TV, radio. And everyone thinks we have gone crazy. And that's great. Let them think that way. Let them label us that way. Because if they think that way and they label us that way, then what will they do? They will avoid us. Because you are crazy. And if I associate with you, I may become crazy too. So, watch out. So this is a blessing of Krishna, that all our friends don't call us anymore. And this is a blessing of Krishna, that our relatives are saying, you're crazy. What happened to you? And then they all withdraw from the environment. Where are all my friends? No one's calling me. Even my mother doesn't call me as she used to. It's my daughter's gone a little crazy. I'm going to call my other daughter. She's normal. Well, oftentimes people complain. They say, Maharaj, now we took up this devotional line. It seems we don't. Our friends are disappearing. Because when we, and then we don't do anything. All we do, we go to their house, and then they serve us some food, and we say, "Oh, is this onion garlic?" I say, "Yeah, of course." Maharaj always has onion garlic. No, I'm sorry, I don't eat onion garlic. What? Was it? No, I mean, that's just some my personal life. I don't eat. What do you mean you don't eat? This is life. This is blood. This is Punjabi. And then they say, no, I'm doing some yoga now. And in this yoga, we have to eat certain foods and we can't eat this.
The art of eating.
The art of eating. And then people say, well, then they start thinking, I guess I can't invite her over anymore for dinner because she doesn't eat our food and she's become something special now. And like this, one by one, you start to rise above the illusion and everybody that supports it. Because the environment is full of objects and people. And when the objects are disconnected from Krishna and the people are disconnected from Krishna, they are sources of illusion. And even an insentient object can be a source of illusion. It's just connected from Krishna. So people and objects, they all have connection with Krishna. They all have a relationship with Krishna. But if someone chooses to go away from that relationship, then we have to eliminate them. We have to withdraw from them. There's no. This is all part of the test. Krishna's saying, you want me? All right, get ready. You're going to get some good cracks and good slaps. How much do you love me? How much do you love me? This much? This much? Oh, yeah, Krishna, I don't know. It's getting a little bit too much now. Maybe I want to love you a little less, you know, because I've taken away this friend and that friend, and now my parents are going against me. And
we need to balance it completely.
Yeah, we need to balance it by throwing everyone off one side of the scale and putting Krishna. And on the other side of the scale, you sit there. That's the balance. Everything else is imbalanced. It's really like this. If you really want to be serious, we have to employ the famous phrase, all or nothing. All or nothing, we say. All or none, maybe we say. All or nothing. So Krishna's that way. He's an autocrat. This is the meaning of being a transcendental autocrat. He's a dictator. He's really a spiritual dictator. If someone's a dictator, they say, listen, this is my kingdom. Everything goes according to what I want. Oh, but what about us? Hey, out. Either your head's off or you're out of here. So Krishna's like this. He's such a dictator. He's so demanding. You have to become an absolute spiritual slave. Because actually, if you analyze it, there's only two choices. Either you're a slave to your senses, or you can be a slave to Krishna. You can be Krishna's slave or a slave to your senses. Slave to the genitals, slave to the eyes, ears, nose, skin, touch. It's all slavery. The soul is a slave. The soul is a serving unit. The Atma is a unit of service. Service means slavery. Oh, I'm independent. I want my freedom. I want my independence. Acha. Where's the independence? No one has ever been independent. No one has ever been free. I don't want to surrender to Krishna. I want my freedom. Free to be a slave to your body. Free to be a slave to your senses. What's his freedom? Is a slave free? And free the slaves. Abe Lincoln, free the slaves. The slave he's owned by the master. And he's controlled by the master. And he does what the master says. That's a slave, right? He's owned by the master, he's controlled by the master, and he does whatever the master says. Is it right? So the Atma, entrapped in the material body, is a slave. He does whatever the body says, he's controlled by the body, and he serves the body day and night. So we're a slave of the senses and body. And then someone says, well, why don't you be a slave? And then what do you get from that slavery? You don't get much pay. You get a happiness? Oh, a drop. And you get old age, disease, and death. That's the result of your slavery. But Krishna says, hey, come be my slave. I'm a compassionate dictator. Your body is not a compassionate dictator. Your body is a mean dictator. Krishna is also a dictator. So we can be Krishna's slave and be under his dictation. But he's compassionate. He's a sweet dictator. And the body is a sour dictator. Is it right? You have to gradually realize this. Saying is okay, but becoming enslaved by Krishna. Hey Krishna, do you want to know what bhakti means in a nutshell? Krishna, whatever you want, that's what I want. And nothing more and nothing less. This is bhakti. It's easy to write down. Very, very easy to write down. Write it on your forehead, right on the back of your palm. What is bhakti?
My t-shirt.
Bhakti means, what is it?
Whatever Krishna you want.
Bhakti means to fully accept, embrace the principle. Krishna, whatever you want, that's what I want. Nothing less and nothing more. But as soon as he's, but I want, uh-oh, then it's mixed up. Krishna, just, can I have a little? No! Tom! Because he's a dictator. The slave says, oh master, can I have just one day off? No! This is a frightening proposal. But the thing is that the slavery of Krishna, becoming Krishna's slave, is so frightening. But at the same time, we're completely entrenched in the slavery of our body and mind and senses, 24 hours a day. Now sleep, now eat, now do this, now fight, now defend, now argue, now do this. Oh, you remember, now blah, blah. It's God, we're just slaving, the soul is just being whipped. Soul is being whipped, literally whipped by the senses. The senses are whipping us. think like this, act like this, speak like this. Oh, she said this. Well, I'll do that. You do this to me, I'll do that to you. You cut me, I'll cut you. This, that, other thing. But and there's no sweetness. It's always pinching. But Krishna slavery is poison in the beginning and nectar in the end. Krishna's telling the Gita, when one comes in the path of yoga, especially bhakti yoga, it's poison in the beginning, nectar in the end. Ashlishyava paratam panashtamam adarshanam mamatam kurotuva yata tata va vidadatu lampato mat prananatasu sa eva napraha napraha. Oh, Gopinath, oh, Vrindavannath, I don't know anyone else. You are my Lord. You're the Lord of my pran, mat prananatas, not mat prananath. You're my prananath. Tusa eva naparaha, aparaha, naparaha, aparayam. There's nobody else. And I, as I move closer to you, as I get to know you, I find out that you are actually very, very sweet and compassionate dictator. One of the best. One of the best dictators I've ever met. Because you're not an autocrat, you're a transcendental autocrat. And that's the difference between you and every other dictator in this world, including my body and senses.